the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. John Kerry on Sunday accused George W. Bush of stonewalling separate inquiries into the events leading up to the September 2001 terrorist attacks, as well as into the intelligence that suggested Saddam Hussein was hiding weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Kerry, the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee, endorsed complaints by some members of a federal commission investigating the attacks that Bush was resisting their efforts to get documents and question witnesses. Kerry said the public deserves an answer as soon as possible about what went wrong leading up to the attacks, which killed nearly 3,000 people in New York, Washington, and Pennsylvania. Senator John McCain said on Sunday the commission created by George W. Bush to investigate intelligence failures in the build-up to the Iraq War needs subpoena power. McCain, a member of the bipartisan panel, said such powers would give the commission certain credibility and voiced hope an agreement would be reached to obtain it. Asked on ABC's This Week if he would continue to serve on the commission if it did not get subpoena power, McCain said, "I'd hate to throw down the gauntlet like that." Bush gave the commission until March 31, 2005 to report back, meaning results would not be known until after November when voters decide whether to give him a second term. Leaders of 85% of the nation's mosques are involved in terrorist activities, and some have made irresponsible statements about the September 11th terrorist attacks, said Representative Peter King, a Long Island Republican. The 85% figure was drawn from research done for his recently published novel, Veil of Tears, about the World Trade Center attacks. Muslim groups on Long Island have denounced the claim, accusing him of fanning anti-Muslim sentiment to sell books. King denied that charge. He said leaders of the mosque in Westbury, New York, had tried to pass blame for the attacks on a Zionist conspiracy and had not cooperated with law enforcement officers investigating potential terrorist activities. More news after this.
Sting for VH1 Save the Music.
When children learn music, they learn to think in a different way. Studies have shown that it helps them to do better work in other subjects. So make sure your kids learn music. They'll learn much more than how to carry a tune.
School music programs are in trouble. Help VH1 save the music in our public schools. Please call toll-free 1-888-VH1-4MUSIC.
VH1 Save the Music, because music education equals brain power.
A German court rejected a legal bid on Friday by an unemployed man who wanted the state to provide him with free pornography and trips to brothels because his wife is in Thailand. The court in the southern town of Ansbach ruled that social services did not extend to satisfying the 43-year-old's sexual needs after he attempted to sue his local welfare office. The man earlier asked the foreign ministry to fly his wife back from her native Thailand, to which she had returned in 2002, saying that he could not afford the ticket. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
I wonder, is there anything that White House political operative Karl Rove won't try to turn into a political ad? I'm not even counting the big P.T. Barnum stunts like posing George in a Top Gun costume on that aircraft carrier last year or secretly flying Bush all the way to Iraq last Thanksgiving so he could be photographed holding a turkey. For these guys, everything is a prop, paid for by us taxpayers. Take the federal budget, which usually is crammed with statistics and charts detailing the seriousness of the government's business. But this year, for the first time ever, the document includes 27 glossy photos of our boy George in various heroic poses. Here he is in front of a giant American flag. Here he is talking with an old woman in a wheelchair. Here he is helping a child learn to read. One expects to find a centerfold pop-up of Bush hugging a puppy. Speaking of popping up, his Georgeness popped up at the famous Daytona 500 NASCAR race, posturing before 180,000 race fans and a huge TV audience. If he wants to make a campaign appearance there, fine. But Rove put him in Air Force One, costing us taxpayers about $57,000 an hour for the flight, and they used the plane itself as a prop, dramatically swooping over the racetrack as he departed. A priceless publicity shot dutifully covered by NBC, which broke away from coverage of the race itself to show the Prez soaring up and away. Bush even uses taxpayer funds for literally making TV ads. His new Medicare prescription drug law, which actually will deliver more to the profiteering drug companies than to senior citizens, has been turned into a glowing 30-second TV ad by the White House. It cost us taxpayers $9.5 million to air it. This is Jim Hightower saying, for the Bushites, all the world is a stage, and we're merely the people who have to pay for their show.
Randy, tell these Vermont campers a scary story.
They called it heartburn. The frequent kind. The kind only a monster could scare away. Well, a monster, or a new pill called Prilosec OTC. One pill a day for 24 hours of zero heartburn. It's possible with Prilosec OTC. And it starts working the very first day. But without this little pill, things could get creepy.
Randy, hold me!
Use as directed for 14 days for frequent heartburn.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends. Happy Monday. And welcome to our listeners, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom in the American way, from coast to coast, border to border, and all around the planet. Streaming from radiopower.org, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, and on terrestrial radio stations, literally from coast to coast in America. Adding the vitamin folate to flour. And you say, Ed, now, wait a minute, what does this have to do with democracy and the general topics of this show? This, from the Associated Press, in Saturday's paper, article by Daniel Q. Harney, folate in food may reduce heart disease and strokes. Adding the vitamin folate to flour, a practice begun in 1996 to prevent birth defects. See, they found that it seems that spina bifida and several other types of birth defects, that one in particular, have a high correlation with folate deficiency. True tragedy for so many people. And so they ordered this. The government made this discovery, and the government said to the manufacturers of flour, sort of like they did with salt years ago. We used to have goiter in the United States. I mean, back in in the 30s, the 40s, throughout the 19th century, the reason why is because people need iodine. It's an essential nutrient. But you don't find it in the soil of the Midwest. In fact, you get more than 400 or 500 miles away from the seacoast, and you pretty much don't find iodine. And if people don't eat seafood or sea vegetables, like, you know, that green seaweed that they wrap sushi up in, people don't eat that stuff, they don't get iodine. And goiter used to be a big deal. And the way that it was treated was by giving people iodine supplements. And finally, in the, I don't know, 50s, I think it was, 40s or the 50s, the government said, hey, you know, to the manufacturers of salt, you got to add iodine to your salt. And all of a sudden, this huge public health problem, I mean, goiter is where the thyroid gland gets all swollen up in the neck and the metabolism goes crazy. And this incredible public health problem that we'd had in the United States ever since basically we moved off the coast, off the East Coast, and started settling the central parts of the country. A huge public health problem went away. And so then they discovered in 96 that there was a similar thing with birth defects and folic acid. It's basically one of the B vitamins. Anything in green has folate in it. In fact, folate, you know, like foliage, It's where the word comes from. I mean, it shares the same root word. I'm assuming it's Latin. I don't know. Maybe it's Greek. And folic acid, turns out, prevents these birth defects. So in 1996, the government said to the flour manufacturers in America, you have to add folic acid, or folate, to flour so that it shows up in bread and other flour products, cookies, whatever. Got to add it. Well, now a government study was just done, and they found, they were not expecting this. They were expecting that this would prevent birth defects. I mean, this was done specifically to prevent birth defects. It was the only positive side effect that they knew that would come out of adding folate to food. And they just did an epidemiological study on this stuff, and they discovered that last year, apparently, adding folate to our food supply prevented 48,000 deaths from stroke and heart attacks. 48,000 people didn't die last year who would have died because folic acid was added to our food. Now, why am I bringing this up? I'm bringing this up because the conservative mantra is you should run government like a business. Remember when Bush and Cheney first got into office? Ah, this is going to be the first CEO administration. The first time two CEOs have ever been president and vice president. First time a CEO had ever been president, period. And look what we got. Yeah, run government like a business, sure. See, people who say that clearly have never bothered to study American history or the history of government, and they have no understanding of what democracy is or how it works. I mean, it is just that simple. And, you know, for those of you who are still victims of Newt Gingrich's word police activities back in the 80s, I will say, who don't have an understanding, instead of saying democracy, who don't have an understanding of how a constitutionally limited democratic republic works. Yes, we all remember Newt issued the decree. What was it, 85? Democracy sounds too much like democratic. Let's go back to James Madison in Federalist, 36, I think it was. No, 26, where he talked about the dangers of democracy, of mob rule. We have a republic, not a democracy. And republic sounds more like Republican. So let's change our language here. And in 25 years, they've succeeded. Well, yes, we do live in a republic, but the odd thing, language changes over time. 3,000 years ago, in Athens, Greece, the word democracy meant a minimum of 6,000 people had to show up in this island city-state for a decision to be made. 6,000 was the threshold. For a jury trial, you had to have 501 jurors. That's how many convicted Socrates, you may remember, of corrupting youth. What was the corruption? He spoke out against democracy and encouraged the revolt of the 40 and the revolt of the, 400, I think it was, that brought down democracy in Athens for a brief period of time, and then it came back. But anyhow, back then, democracy really was a little more like mob rule. I mean, basically, it was majority wills. And we create, we use some of that. We use some of the Iroquois Confederacy. We use some of the Roman Republic. And we put together this thing in 1776 in the United States. First time outside of Athens, Greece, 3,000 years ago, the first time in the 6,000-year history of civilization that any people had said, well, instead of being ruled by a warlord king who holds power by threat of violence, or being ruled by a theocrat who holds power that if you don't do what he says, you're going to burn forever. And instead of being ruled by the rich, a system known as feudalism or serfdom, we're going to create a fourth way. We're going to rule ourselves. Rule by the people. And yeah, there was a brief period there when they were trying to sell the Constitution in 1787. where they went to great pains, or at least Alexander Hamilton and James Madison did, and John Jay, who authored the Federalist Papers, went to great pains to say to people, we're not creating a democracy. Now, the reason why they said that was because back then, everybody had read Greek history. We had one of the most well-educated electorates in the history of the world. De Tocqueville came over here. Alexis de Tocqueville came over here in 1834 and spent a little less than a year traveling around the country. Went back and in 1836 published Democracy in America, which was one of the three best-selling books of the entire 19th century, along with Uncle Tom's Cabin and Trilby. I'll tell you about Trilby sometime. That's a fascinating story, but not right now. Anyhow, de Tocqueville went to great lengths to point out, he had an entire chapter in Democracy in America about how even the average dirt farmer could tell you the history of Greece. He was just amazed by that, by the fact that Americans held education so high. So back then, everybody understood that democracy in Greece meant one particular thing, and that we weren't doing that. I mean, it might work for a city-state, it might work for a tribe, it might work in a community. It certainly works at the level of cities. We're still doing it here in New England with town meetings. Pure democracy. But it doesn't work when you try to build a nation out of a bunch of separate states. Then you have to have something a little more sophisticated, which James Madison referred to as a republic, although it technically isn't a republic either. We're not like the Roman Republic. There are a lot of differences. And so what happened was, you know, there was this little 5-year period there. Actually, it was really only about 2 years. Most of it in the first year, 1787, where people were saying, we're not a democracy, we're a republic. And then people started referring to America in the 1790s as a liberal democracy. You find writings by George Washington, for example, saying, as America increases in liberality, we hope to see an improvement of conditions. And liberal democracy has been the term since basically 1790, 1795, that everybody in the world has used to describe the form of government that we have here in the United States and most Western European nations have, and that has spread to South Africa and most of South America and all around the world. Anyhow, I digressed. The point is that in a liberal democracy, we are ruling us, and the government has a very specific function. And businesses have a very specific function. And those are two different things. The very specific function of government in a liberal democracy or a constitutionally limited democratic republic, you know, whatever you want to call it. The purpose of government is to protect the commons and to protect the people. In particular, to protect minorities from majorities. In our form of government, the government does not give rights to we the people. This is probably the biggest misconception that Americans have, that we get our rights from the government. I got my First Amendment right not to speak. The First Amendment simply recognized that right. There was a big argument between Jefferson and Madison before the Bill of Rights was put together. Jefferson was saying, we got to have a Bill of Rights in here. And Madison saying, we don't need any Bill of Rights. The government doesn't take any rights. The government only has privileges. And Jefferson said, yes, I know, but some future people won't remember our discussions, and they may think that the government bestows rights. We have to make it very clear. And that led to the Ninth Amendment, which says basically that any rights not defined in the first 8 amendments doesn't mean that the government holds those rights. They still revert to the people. Is, you know, very clear, very explicit. And trying to run the government like a business has led to an absolute and utter economic disaster for America, and it is putting democracy at risk. I'm going to lay some examples on you of this and of the conservative agenda to completely bankrupt our nation. This is Tom Hartman, 20 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned, we'll be back.
Com- Competition has driven some fisheries into deep trouble. An author sees a sustainable alternative. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Shrinking ocean fisheries are forcing ever tougher competition for what remains. Rod Fujita says that's pushed many fish species to dangerously low numbers. Fujita is the author of a new book called Heal the Ocean.
Nobody owns the fish, so nobody's responsible for them. And that sets up a vicious competition amongst individual fishermen and amongst countries to maximize their share of the catch, which is unspecified. They don't really know how much they're entitled to. So they build large fleets and subsidize them and try to create more powerful gear to catch as much as they can.
Fujita says high-tech fishing equipment and government subsidies are symptoms of a system gone awry, and he says blanket quotas for cod and other species only heated up the competition among fleets. Fujita says the answer lies in two bold steps: creating marine reserves where fishing is banned, and in establishing specific catch allowances. He says each country and even individual fishing boats need to know how many fish they can catch each season.
The solution really is to specify use privileges for both individuals and countries so that people will know how much they're entitled to. It can be a percentage of the total allowable catch, for example. And once people have that share in hand, they can plan their businesses around that share rather than planning it around competition.
More than 90 of the world's fisheries are now covered by these individual quotas. British Columbia manages 25 Pacific fish species that way, and Fujita says the results have been good for conservation and for the fishing industry. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
Lancers, bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say an army of one?
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product. Trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he a guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Mother, Mother Ocean, I've heard you call, wanted to sail upon your waters since I was 3 feet tall. You've seen it all. You've seen it all.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman, 25 minutes past the hour. Greetings also to our folks in our chat room. If you go to TomHartmann.com and click on the chat button, it'll drop you into the chat room. It drops you into a form on CompuServe that we use, and then you push the chat button there, and that gets you a list of the chat rooms, and there's one called the Tom Hartmann Radio Program. Drop in and say hi, and hello to all the folks there. It's always great to see you there. Okay, what does this have to... Back to folic acid and bread. The point that I wanted to make about this stuff, the fact that the government said put folic acid in bread, and now 48,000 fewer people have died this year, not to mention the tens of thousands of birth defects that didn't happen. I mean, that's not even looking at that. The conservatives would say, this is silly. The market should determine these things. If people want folic acid, they'll ask for it. But here's the thing. We've had spina bifida and other serious birth defects, that being, probably 80 or 90% of the ones caused by folate deficiency, for centuries. And it wasn't until the government did the research, because the government had the luxury of saying, okay, we are charged with protecting the public health. We don't have to look for a profit motive here. And so in looking for the to protect the public health, we can do these epidemiological studies, and we can find out what's making the difference, what makes something work and what makes something not work. And the government discovered that folic acid was causing these birth defects, and so they went to the food manufacturers and said, if you want to play the game of food business in America, here's the rules, right? That's the FDA, the USDA, rather. And one of the rules now is you've got to put folic acid in bread or in flour. And 48,000 people are alive today who wouldn't have been alive today in the last year. 48,000 deaths were averted because our government is set up by we the people for we the people, not for profit. This is the thing that you really have to get this. The question is, do you want a government operating for profit, or do you want a government operating for us? If you want a government that operates for profit, where all decisions are made based on what's going to be the best for business and business people, period, regardless of its impact on the public health, regardless of its impact on you and me, regardless of its impact on our privacy, regardless of its impact on our rights, then go with the conservatives. I mean, that is unabashedly their philosophy. If you want to live in a liberal democracy, as most democracies around the world are, and as the United States has been up until Ronald Reagan started spreading the conservative mantra, Bill Clinton got infected by it, and George W. now is going full tilt boogie. If you want to live in a liberal democracy, then help wake people up to the absolute stupidity of trying to run a government like a business. In a business, the bottom line is profit. In a government, the bottom line is, are we serving the people? Very straightforward. I mean, the law even requires that a business must serve its stockholders and not the people. It requires that. If you run a business and you fail to enhance profits, you get penalized. You can actually go to jail, but at the very least, the IRS will penalize you. So why is Alan Greenspan promoting adjustable rate mortgages, and what does this have to do with the conservative takeover of America and electoral politics, holding things together long enough that George Bush can get himself elected? What's going on here? This is an amazing story, folks. Stick around. This is Tom Hartmann. I'll be back.
After the towers fell, our streets, homes, and offices were coated with dust-containing asbestos and other cancer-causing chemicals. But instead of heeding the health warnings of their own experts, the Bush White House told us it was safe to go back into Lower Manhattan when it wasn't. There is a better way to protect us, Mr. President. Take action now that keeps more harm from happening. Clean up the world trade dust that's still in our homes and workplaces. And be honest with us. Don't hold back health warnings that will keep us safe.
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A little-known moment of union busting occurred during Haiti's recent coup d'etat. Workers at the Grupo M textile factory on the Haitian side of the border with the Dominican Republic recently formed their own union. The factory's probably best known for making Levi's jeans. Well, last Monday, as rebels seized the capital, managers at the factory fired every union member. Tuesday saw remaining workers protest, and that's when a contingent of rebels visited the factory, reportedly at management's request. They rounded up some 36 people, beat several, and arrested 10. They were released after spending a day in jail, charges unknown. All who were fired last week have been told to pick up their final paychecks today.
The nearly three-year boycott of Taco Bell has gained new momentum with protest rallies outside Yum Brands, Taco Bell's parent company, and at Taco Bell headquarters in Irvine, California. Coalition of Immokalee Workers members erected a pyramid of 120 tomato buckets outside the company's headquarters, representing the 2 tons of tomatoes immigrant workers have to pick to earn $50 in a day. Tile Bañales from Comercial Justo.
They've used the excuse that it's their distributors that need to make this change. But Taco Bell is a huge corporation that buys a ton of tomatoes every year. And if Taco Bell can push and be a heavyweight and say, hey, we want to support responsible labor practices, it'll happen.
Julia Perkins is a staffer with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers and explains the reasons for the boycott.
No health insurance, no sick days, no overtime pay for overtime work, nothing, no benefits of any kind, and in addition, they're excluded from the right to organize.
Workers vow to continue their struggle until they receive a wage increase of 1 penny per every pound of tomatoes picked.
Better late than never, the Securities and Exchange Commission announces plans to form a special branch to investigate corporate links to so-called rogue nations. A new law requires the SEC to investigate corporate ties to states on the government's list of terrorism supporters and to make that information available to shareholders and the public. But the promise of the SEC's new Office of Global Security Risk is quite limited. As of now, the agency's only devoting 5 people to the project.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Weapons of mass destruction isn't the only thing Bush can't seem to find these days. The nearly 2.5 million new jobs predicted by presidential advisors hasn't materialized. The latest Bureau of Labor Statistics report shows an unchanged unemployment rate of 5.6%, but the Economic Policy Institute notes one reason the unemployment numbers haven't risen is that last month, 392,000 people dropped out as labor force participants. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Is there anybody here who'd like to change his clothes into a uniform? Is there anybody here who thinks they're only serving out a raging storm? Is there anybody here with glory in their eyes, loyal to the end, whose duty is to die? I want to see him. I want to wish him luck. I want to shake his hand, want to call his name, put a medal on the man.
And welcome back. There Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here. Why? By the way, before I continue, I get email. People post messages on our message board, and I get emails all the time from folks saying, how can we support your program? And this is not public radio. I mean, we are on one radio station, radiopower.org, that is supported by contributions from its listeners. That's the web radio station. But our commercial radio stations that carry our program are supported by their sponsors. And during every hour of this program, there's a couple of sponsors that you'll hear they're called network minutes. They're my sponsors. And then you'll hear ads that are locally placed by your radio station. I have no idea what they are because every station does them differently. And if you want to support this kind of programming, not just this program, but, you know, send a message to radio station managers that that, quote, progressive talk radio or liberal talk radio or whatever you want to call this, I call it uncommon sense from the radical middle, because I think that my point of view reflects that of the average American, actually. But anyhow, if you want to send a message to radio stations that this kind of programming works and is successful, patronize their advertisers. Because that's how, it's funny, when radio stations get calls from people, they love to get calls of support. Yes, we love the show, and that's all well and good. And even people who are upset when radio stations hear from them, like if you think that calling a radio station about conservative talk radio, for example, and saying, I'm tired of conservative, the station manager goes, oh, he's listening, right? So it's the real pressure point, as it were, the real place where you can make a difference is with the advertisers. And so my suggestion is that you patronize the advertisers of this program and any program that you support, and let them know that you're patronizing them because of the program. So, and I just say that I've been getting, just in the last week, it seems there's been just a bunch of them, and so I just want to lay that up. And of course, radiopower.org, you can contribute to their efforts on their website at radiopower.org, those of you who are listening on the Internet. Now, back to the electoral strategy of the Bush administration. Alan Greenspan is revealing himself for the Republican that he is. And it goes beyond just Republican. And because, first of all, let me say, there are many good Republicans who absolutely agree with me that George Bush is not a conservative in the classical sense. He is some new kind of hybrid, a corporate shill is the closest I can come to saying it. How do you describe it? What word would you? I don't know. But he's not a Republican, he's not a conservative. And the Republican Party has been taken over by these people, and there's a lot of people in the Republican Party just backing away. And a lot of this started. Now, some of it, of course, as I've mentioned before, goes all the way back to the 1770s, when Alexander Hamilton got up at the Constitutional Convention, the first Constitutional Congress, when they were putting together the Constitution, and said that aristocracy. A benevolent aristocracy was the finest form of government that had ever been created. It was the most stable, and therefore we should have a president who served for life. Hamilton thought we should have a president serve for life, and that the Senate should not be elected by the people; it should be appointed by the states. And Hamilton actually got the second part. The Senate wasn't directly elected by the people until 1917. But anyhow, they are reflecting this worldview of aristocracy, a benevolent aristocracy, and it really got its modern day start with Ayn Rand's book Atlas Shrugged, and her creating this whole cult of objectivism, which then led to the Libertarian Party, and the Cato Institute, and they have influenced conservative thinkers and Leo Strauss and neoconservatives, and to the point where there's this religion, and it really and truly is a religion in that. It is operating out of a belief system. There's little empirical evidence for it. Yes, we know kingdoms are stable, but at what cost? It's a religion. And this religion of economic it's sort of like voodoo is a religion. I mean, that's why George Bush Sr. referred to it as voodoo economics. So Alan Greenspan, who was initiated by Ayn Rand into her cult in the 1950s in her apartment in New York City, back when she was married to one guy and was carrying on with another, and it was all a very strange thing. One of her husbands wrote a remarkable story about it. Anyhow, Greenspan was in the middle of all that, and he's a true believer in this stuff. I mean, he really believes, as I think many of these guys do, that the way to have prosperity is to have a corporatocracy. I mean, they agree with Mussolini's conception of corporatism. He first called it corporatism the first couple of years, and then he changed the name to fascism, which in his mind was a positive word, because fasce was the bundle of sticks that was the symbol of the Roman Empire, with a rope around it, with an axe sticking out of the top. And, a bundle of sticks is stronger than a single stick. That's why the eagle on the American symbol is holding a bundle of arrows. I mean, there are bundles. You see these fasce bundles. There's one, the woman on the symbol in the United States Senate is holding one. So anyhow, Greenspan says that and this has boggled the mind of the economic community. Greenspan said last week in his testimony before Congress that more people should be getting adjustable rate mortgages. Now, this has got everybody scratching their heads. You know, why would Alan Greenspan say this? Why would he say that more people should be getting adjustable rate mortgages? What's the deal? Adjustable rate mortgages are cheaper. Your payments are lower when interest rates are low, as they are right now. They're at a historic low. They're right down there where they were in the 1950s and back during the Great Depression. But when interest rates go up, the interest rates on adjustable rate mortgages go up. In fact, they go up so much, that in 1982, which wasn't so long ago, they were at 17.6%. Right now, they're at around 3.5%. And that makes a huge difference. I mean, you know, it's if interest rates were going to go back up to where they were in the 80s, and I'm predicting they will over the next 4 or 5 years, just as a consequence of this incredible spending binge. Because, I mean, they went up in the 80s as a consequence of Reagan's tax cuts. And if that was to happen again, well, not just as a consequence of Reagan's tax cuts. It was also the end of the Vietnam War. We were seeing the huge deficit spending that LBJ and Richard Nixon did for the Vietnam War coming home to roost. I mean, just to be fair and not to sound totally partisan here. But anyhow, Alan Greenspan goes before Congress and he says that these adjustable rate mortgages are a good thing. You know, why? And here, Jim Grant, who's the publisher of, let me start out with this article from the New York Times. Of all the peculiar things Alan Greenspan said last month, none was more mystifying than a suggestion that consumers should seriously consider taking out an adjustable rate instead of a fixed rate mortgage at a time when interest rates are near record lows. Now, why would he do this? His comments on mortgages, the New York Times says, left many financial advisors dumbstruck. Jim Grant, publisher of Grant's Interest Rate Observer, says it was possibly the strangest bit of advice ever to be proffered by an American central banker. And the Times goes on to say the biggest question is, why? Why is Greenspan suddenly giving out financial advice? I'll tell you why. Because he's trying to hold together with rubber bands and glue an economy that George Bush is intentionally destroying. You say, wait a minute. George Bush is intentionally trying to bankrupt America? Yes. Why? Because it's part of the conservative religion of privatization. They have already privatized many of our prisons. They want to privatize our schools. They want to privatize. They changed the laws on water supplies recently. If you want to get federal money for your community's water supply, you have to have now in place a privatization plan, a plan to sell off that water supply to a private corporation. And in Atlanta, they saw what happens when you do that. The corporation raised the price, cut services, made a lot of profit, and screwed the people of Atlanta. Georgia was so burned by that, they took their water supply back. Same thing happened down in South America. One of the largest contributors to the Bush campaign and actors on the stage in Iraq, Bechtel, went down in a consortium with a couple of other companies and bought the water supply of, as I recall, it was Bolivia. And actually, people had to buy up because water is, you know, okay, you own the country's water. People had to buy a permit to collect rainwater. And they stopped serving poor communities and distant communities because it wasn't profitable. And people were seeing as much as half of their monthly income going to pay for water. And there was a revolt. There was an actual revolt. And they threw the company out. And the people and the government kind of relented. And the people took back the water supply. And it's now being run as a co-op. It's still not being run by the government. It's being run by local governments as a co-op. And so what did the Water Corporation do? They chartered themselves in the Netherlands, because the Netherlands has a reciprocal we can sue you can sue us agreement with Bolivia, and filed a lawsuit under the World Trade Organization for unfair practices. How dare they not let us do business in their country? This kind of privatization, this is the agenda of these guys. And the reason the Greenspan is promoting adjustable rate mortgages is because he's trying to squeeze the last few drops out of the American middle class. See, if the middle class is sufficiently poor, then you'll have a good, strong working force. Here's Peter Schiff, who's the president of the Euro-Pacific Capital Organization in Newport Beach, California, was quoted. See, adjustable rate mortgages, they used to be about 15% of mortgage applications. Now they're about 25%. They're increasing. And they asked him, why would Greenspan say this? And it's a great quote from him. This is in this New York Times article. He says, Greenspan is really trying to help keep the housing bubble, and by extension, the U.S. economy, expanding. Now, I would add, at least until after the election. See, Americans are going deeper and deeper in debt, and the main way that they're financing that debt is by borrowing against their homes. Have you noticed on TV that nowadays there's basically only two kinds of advertisements? There's the advertisements for your personal stockbroker and your personal banker, which you won't qualify for unless you invest more than $1 million. In some cases, $250,000 will do it. But typically $1 million. You've seen those ads? What's the little baby's name? Oh, I don't know. I'm just her financial advisor. Yeah. There's ads for those folks. And then there's ads saying, I cut up my credit cards. How'd you cut up your credit? I refinanced with Ditech.com or LendingTree.com, fill in the blank. Because you've got the two ends of the scale. You've got those people who are making their money from investments, and now thanks to George Bush's, quote, tax cuts, end quote, his borrowing from our children and giving to wealthy people, those people only pay 15% maximum income tax if they earn their living from investments, and they pay no payroll tax, so no contribution to Social Security, although they're eligible for it. And then on the other hand, you've got working folks who pay Social Security up to the first $87,900 of their income, who are finding themselves squeezed. Real wages are going down. I mean, the average wage has only gone up 0.2% in the last quarter. That's lower than inflation. It means that people are losing spending power. And yet spending's going up. Why is consumer spending going up? Because people are borrowing against their homes. All you have to do is watch the advertising on TV to see it. And why is this happening? Because Greenspan is encouraging it. The government is encouraging. Now, back to what Schiff's quote. He says, Greenspan knows that the only way most homebuyers can afford these ridiculously high prices is with ARMs. Without them, housing prices would collapse. He also knows how important refinance money is to the U.S. consumer. Since long-term interest rates cannot fall low enough to facilitate another wave of fixed-rate refinancings, he is trying to encourage homeowners to refinance one last time, fixed to ARM. In other words, by reducing interest rates the first time, people were able to take 7, 8, 9, 10% mortgages and roll them over into 5 and 6 and 7% fixed-rate mortgages and take some money out of their homes. That was 5 years ago, 3 years ago. Yeah, it's 3 years ago. Now, all those people have done that. And if people stop borrowing against their homes, then the source of consumer spending is going to go away because there are no jobs. And Bush will lose the election. So Greenspan is saying, take a risk. Go to an adjustable rate mortgage. It's a lower interest rate. You can get more money out of your home that way. And when interest rates go up, those people are going to be absolutely doomed. This is Tom Hartman, 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Stories of courage need to be shared. That's why we want to tell you about Senators Bob Graham and Bill Nelson. They have stood strong to protect our coastlines from exploration and drilling by powerful oil and gas companies. But the fight's not over. Congress is now pushing an energy bill that still threatens our coastlines with oil and gas activities, hands billions of dollars in tax breaks over to the oil, gas, coal, and nuclear companies, and could exempt polluters from clean air and safe drinking water laws. What's more, this so-called energy bill doesn't cut our dangerous dependence on foreign oil, fix what's wrong with our aging energy grid, adequately promote renewable wind and solar power, protect consumers, or increase the efficiency or security of our energy system. There is a better way. Call Senators Graham and Nelson at 202-225-3121. Thank them for their courage and ask them to reject this dangerous energy bill. Paid for by the Florida Sierra Club.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. Congress. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Leave on life's is the money. It makes a lot the same. Spends his days counting in a garage by the motorway. He was born a father to a pawn on a Christmas day when the New York Times said God is dead and the war's begun. I've been tossing a hair of the sun today.
And welcome back to the Real Free Speech Zone, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 1-866-889-8894 is our phone number. I haven't given it out up to this point. I really wanted to get that rant out. In the second and third hour here today, we can get into some phone calls if you want. I just want to be on the record about this. I want you to really, it's so important that people understand, that we all understand what the real agenda of this administration is. They believe in privatizing Social Security. They've already said it. They call it private investment accounts, but basically it means that, you know, Wall Street brokers will be able to skim money off the top of your Social Security money. Right now they can't. I mean, there really is a difference here. They want to privatize Medicaid or Medicare, you know, eventually. They're moving in that direction. Prisons are already, I mean, one of the three largest, if you set aside the defense industry, one of the three fastest growing industries in the United States is private prisons. Privatization of prisons, they want to privatize our schools, the whole Edison thing, the big failure in Philadelphia notwithstanding. They want to privatize the FAA, they've already talked about it. They've talked about privatizing Amtrak, the water supplies. They've talked about privatizing welfare services, public power utilities. They've even talked about privatizing the post office. That's something that Ben Franklin invented. By weaseling, they're putting their fingers in. I mean, we have into our federal agencies, our regulatory agencies, where you've got people who are in charge of making sure that the air is clean, who are former lobbyists and senior executives in the dirty smokestack industries. And you got people who are responsible for making sure that the water is pure. And it's just wrong. Absolutely wrong. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Talk radio for the rest of us.
It's coming from the field, but this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. The war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Here's today's Dal Bob Report.
Sociologists often turn to infant mortality rates as an indicator of a country's well-being, and by this measure, we're slipping. For the first time in more than 40 years, the overall infant mortality rate increased from 6.8 deaths per 1,000 in 2001 to 7 such deaths in 2002. The Centers for Disease Control speculates women's decisions to have children later in life may account for the higher rate, though the CDC's report makes no mention of poverty, joblessness, or food insecurity.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A recent report prepared by the Democratic staff of the U.S. House Education and Workforce Committee hangs the most solid number yet on the hidden costs of shopping at Walmart. The committee figures each Walmart store with a staff of 200 or more puts a $420,750 burden on local federal taxpayers for social services costs. These would include housing, education, energy, and tax benefits awarded to workers like those at Walmart who are not paid a living wage and...
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. John Kerry on Sunday accused George W. Bush of stonewalling separate inquiries into the events leading up to the September 2001 terrorist attacks, as well as into the intelligence that suggested Saddam Hussein was hiding weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Kerry, the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee, endorsed complaints by some members of a federal commission investigating the attacks that Bush was resisting their efforts to get documents and question witnesses. Kerry said the public deserves an answer as soon as possible about what went wrong leading up to the attacks, which killed nearly 3,000 people in New York, Washington, and Pennsylvania. Senator John McCain said on Sunday the commission created by George W. Bush to investigate intelligence failures in the buildup to the Iraq War needs subpoena power. McCain, a member of the bipartisan panel, said such powers would give the commission certain credibility and voiced hope an agreement would be reached to obtain it. Asked on ABC's This Week if he would continue to serve on the commission if it did not get subpoena power, McCain said, "I'd hate to throw down the gauntlet like that." Bush gave the commission until March 31, 2005 to report back, meaning results would not be known until after November when voters decide whether to give him a second term. Leaders of 85% of the nation's mosques are involved in terrorist activities, and some have made irresponsible statements about the September 11th terrorist attacks, said Representative Peter King, a Long Island Republican. The 85% figure was drawn from research done for his recently published novel, Veil of Tears, about the World Trade Center attacks. Muslim groups on Long Island have denounced the claim, accusing him of fanning anti-Muslim sentiment to sell books. King denied that charge. He said leaders of the mosque in Westbury, New York, had tried to pass blame for the attacks on a Zionist conspiracy and had not cooperated with law enforcement officers investigating potential terrorist activities. More news after this.
Sting for VH1 Save the Music.
When children learn music, they learn to think in a different way. Studies have shown that it helps them to do better work in other subjects. So make sure your kids learn music. They'll learn much more than how to carry a tune.
School music programs are in trouble. Help VH1 save the music in our public schools. Please call toll-free 1-888-VH1-4MUSIC.
VH1 Save the Music, because music education equals brain power.
A German court rejected a legal bid on Friday by an unemployed man who wanted the state to provide him with free pornography and trips to brothels because his wife is in Thailand. The court in the southern town of Ansbach ruled that social services did not extend to satisfying the 43-year-old's sexual needs after he attempted to sue his local welfare office. The man earlier asked the foreign ministry to fly his wife back from her native Thailand, to which she had returned in 2002, saying that he could not afford the ticket. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
If you get your car stuck in mud, the worst thing you can do is to panic and hit the accelerator, for you'll just spin your wheels and sink deeper into the mud. George Tenet learned this the hard way last month. He's the beleaguered head of our slipping and sliding CIA, which finds itself stuck in the mud of the Bush-Cheney-Rumsfeld lies about weapons of mass destruction. In a panicky effort to defend his agency's capability, Tenet hit the accelerator. He insisted in a widely publicized speech that the CIA is still at the top of its game, and as proof, he cited a clear victory for U.S. spooks in Malaysia against a factory that makes metal parts that, he claimed, can be used in nuclear weapons. Tenet said that as a result of this superb U.S. intelligence, the Malaysian government shut down the factory, a blow to black market proliferators of nukes and an unequivocal victory for the home team of George Tenet and George Bush. But oops, Tenet had faulty information. The Malaysian factory was not closed. It's business as usual, said a factory official as she led a group of reporters through the modern facility shortly after Tenet's wheel-spinning speech. Then, CIA PR flacks hit the accelerator again. First, they claimed that Tenet's misstatement was the result of, quote, an editing error made by speechwriters, not the result of faulty intelligence. The flacks explained that while the entire factory had not been shut down, the section of the plant that made the suspect parts was closed. Oops, wrong again. Malaysian officials say nothing was shut down. Moreover, instead of this factory being one of the largest in the rogue nuclear network, as Tenet claimed, it's a small firm with only 40 employees, mostly making high-precision parts for oil companies. This is Jim Hightower saying, why was Tenet so wrong on such a big speech? Because, get this, no one from the CIA bothered to visit the factory or even speak to its officials.
Oh, Randy, it was a mistake bringing you to the Texas Yodel Off.
Prilosec Odalo TC.
Oh, boy. Well, at least we've helped lots of frequent heartburn sufferers with new Prilosec OTC, that one pill a day.
It little pill-io.
For 24 hours of zero heartburn.
One whole day.
Hee-ho. Oh, it's possible with Prilosec OTC, and it starts working the very first day.
Hee-ho.
Now, if you could just stop that yodeling.
Prilosec Odalo TC.
Use as directed for 14 days for frequent heartburn.
Wow, that's hot.
I think it's cool.
At that speed, definitely hot.
I don't see it that way.
I forgot. You're more right brain.
Right. 24 prints a minute. That's cool.
In black and white or color?
Cool.
For under $1,000.
Cool.
From Xerox?
Really cool.
Sorry, 24 color pages a minute is nothing but hot.
You think anything that's fast is hot?
That's cold.
The new Xerox Phaser 8400, the world's fastest office color printer for under $1,000. To find out how
cool
hot
it really is, visit Xerox.com/...
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends. It's your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. Tom Hartman here. Oh, my. Representative Leonard Boswell. Boy, this guy, a Democrat. He's a Democrat in Iowa. And he introduced the bill. This is the guy. This is the guy. Leonard Boswell. He introduced a bill that required that any no-bid contracts that go to companies like Halliburton and Bechtel and other good buddies of the Bush administration, that required that no-bid contracts be subject to congressional oversight. In other words, Congress has to take a look at them or has the ability or the right to look at them. Well, that was apparently a mistake. Today, Vice President Cheney is in Iowa. the former CEO of Halliburton, a guy who's still got a couple hundred thousand stock options in Halliburton. The more Halliburton stock goes up, the more millions Dick Cheney becomes worth. Plus, he gets $150,000 a year deferred salary from Halliburton. Our vice president, can you imagine if Hillary Clinton had been getting a $150,000 a year salary from anybody, much less somebody who did business with the government, and then defrauded the government? For millions? Anyhow, Dick Cheney today in Iowa stumping on behalf of Boswell's Republican opponent. Karl Rove has declared Representative Leonard Boswell public enemy number one. My producer reminds me to remind you of our telephone number, 1-866. One of those newfangled toll-free numbers. You know, they used up the 800 numbers and whatnot. 1-866-889-8894. And feel free to call if you want to weigh in on the issues of the day. Representative Leonard Boswell said Friday he's introduced a bill. Yeah, here it is. So anyhow, I got an email from him, you know, asking for money. I'm not sure which mailing list that I'm a member of that, you know, got me this. It sure wasn't my RNC mailing list to membership. Probably the DNC or the Greens or something. I don't know. Anyhow, he's in trouble, Leonard Boswell, and looking for some help from some friends. So I wish him well, and hopefully I've sensitized you to some of those issues. I want to wrap up Greenspan's con job. I've got a fantastic little bit of information from a former president I want to share with you. Did you know about the New Mexico GOP donor who gets no oil drilling leeway? This is, you know, the privatization, this whole idea of run government like a business. Well, first of all, it's not possible. They have different purposes. Well, then run government for business. Well, okay, you can do that. The according to the dictionary, the merging of corporate and state interests actually has a meaning. It's in the dictionary. It's called fascism. And, you know, these guys, hell-bent for leather to do this. 1-866-889-8894 is our phone number if you'd like to call in. Kay in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Kay, welcome to the program.
Hi, I think you're right on. You just gave a definition of fascism. But what I've seen over my last seven decades is an ever-increasing criticism of capitalism the way it is currently practiced on the globe, because it is entirely detrimental to the environment. Everything for capitalism is directed towards profit at the expense of society, environment, whatever. And this is obviously what the current administration is aiming at when they move towards more privatization. It's an extension of the old-fashioned principles of capitalism into government.
Yeah.
And they're taking... This is happening all over the globe, this move towards
privatization. I agree. Let me define terms just a little more tightly here, though, because capitalism isn't the problem. Laissez-faire capitalism is the problem.
Exactly.
And laissez-faire is a French phrase that basically means let them do what they want.
Leave them alone.
Leave them alone, literally, is what it means. Thank you. And George Soros wrote probably the best book on this. It's called The Crisis of Global Capitalism. And he's a guy who should know. He's worth billions. And he made it through capitalism. And he, in his book, The Crisis of Global Capitalism, and in a number of good, brilliant pieces that he's written, I quote extensively from one of them in my book on equal protection, he points out that laissez-faire capitalism is akin to cancer. It ultimately will destroy its host, that is, the governments that provide for it.
Exactly. But the environment.
Right. But the problem is not capitalism. Controlled capitalism, within the context of a democratic republic, is a good thing. It leads to growth. It builds economies. It gives entrepreneurs opportunities. It develops. I'm not saying that growth in and of itself is a good thing. You know, again, that's the cancer metaphor. But if somebody comes up with a better way of doing something, somebody comes up with a new form of energy, for example, it's capitalism that'll bring it forward. I'm not anti-capitalist.
The way it is now, no holds barred on capitalism.
That's right. But laissez-faire capitalism.
Anything they want to do.
Unconstrained. Well, not only do we have laissez-faire capitalism, unconstrained capitalism, that is, unconstrained by the force of government which gives it birth and allows it to exist, but we have now a situation where capitalism has, where capital power, capitalism isn't simply a fancy word that basically means the ability to invest, to earn money with money, to allow money to do things. Right, and these forces now are seeking to take over governments and to take control of governance itself, and that's when it becomes fascism, and that's when it becomes so very toxic. And
well,
that's,
there's another book in addition to Soros. There's Grider's The Soul of Capitalism.
Yes,
and,
which is
and
brilliant.
What people don't realize is that we're having the rug pulled out from under us.
Yes,
and if it continues this way, everything is going to be aimed at profit and with no consideration to how the profit is made, whether it's legal or illegal or at the expense of the environment or a society.
Yeah.
Nothing matters except profit.
Well, absolutely well said, Kay. You're spot on, and not only that. I mean, you know, you've identified the big problem, and it's not. And you said if things continue going this way, then it's going to get like that. It's already there. It's already there. Look at what happened with the mercury emissions. The Clinton administration had mandated this 80% reduction in mercury. But the Bush administration cut it back to a 20% reduction, even though we know that it's killing people. It's causing birth defects. It's causing cancers. It's causing all these. And now the Bush administration has the audacity to run around saying, we're reducing mercury by 20%. Aren't we great? Yes, that's part of the Clean Skies Initiative. It's absolutely nuts. 1-866-889-8894. Our number, Rich in Grand Rapids, is on the line. Hey, Rich, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, how are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you?
I'm all right. I'd never heard your program before, and I happen to be flipping through the dials, and I caught it a little while ago.
Great.
And you started out sounding pretty good to me when you were talking about the Constitution and how we have our rights, they aren't given to us by the Constitution. The Constitution, basically through the Bill of Rights, ensures that the government can't take them away. The Constitution basically limits what government can do. And I thought I tuned into a conservative talk show host.
I think democracy is neither conservative nor liberal.
Well, then you went on to describe, well, you got onto one topic talking about the Food and Drug Administration and the ingredient that is in bread, I believe.
Yeah, folate.
Okay. Anyway, you went on to say that there was something like 48,000 people would be dead today or this year if it wasn't in there. Conservatives, if they had their way, it wouldn't be there. And if you believe that government shouldn't be involved in this and that, the industry and companies should be able to do what they want, that stuff would be in there. And if that's what you think that should be, then you're a conservative. And you just blew me away with that because, I know lots of conservatives and 99 out of 100 wouldn't agree with that.
Wouldn't agree with what?
Wouldn't agree that the government doesn't have any place in regulating business and that if conservatives, were in charge of everything, that there wouldn't be these sort of regulations.
George Bush gave a speech. It was interesting. I heard it on C-SPAN yesterday. His fundraiser in California, where he walked away with a nice $1 million for a 20-minute speech. And in it, he three different times talked about how important it was to get rid of unnecessary government regulations. And
right.
And his definition of unnecessary government regulations are basically those that constrain corporations. We've seen this over and over and over again. They're underfunding. I mean, look at what happened with the mad cow debacle. They're underfunding the USDA. They're underfunding the FDA. You have Superfund sites all over the United States. The government has allocated no funding at all this year for it. They're now.
What? No funding to what? I can barely hear you.
I'm sorry. The Superfund sites around the United States are supposed to be paid for by industry, by the companies that created them. And this administration has turned it around to say, no, the industries don't have to pay into that fund anymore. The government will pay for it. And then they went beyond that and said, oh, and by the way, we're going to cut government funding for that. And so you've got all these super, it just goes on and on and on. And the point that they make is that it's somehow conservative. And this is why I'm saying they're not really conservatives. That it's somehow conservative to say whatever's in the interest of business is the best thing for America.
Okay, and I
say,
can I respond?
Sure.
Okay, first off, I would agree that whoever creates the problem is ethically and should be legally responsible for fixing the problem.
But George Bush disagrees with
you. I am a very strong conservative. So if an industry pollutes the ground or the water or the air, it is that, and specifically the companies that do it, should be responsible for cleaning it up.
And do you think government should enforce that should be?
Absolutely.
Okay,
that's one of the purposes of government.
Then Rush Limbaugh and George Bush say you are not a conservative.
Not exactly. You as a liberal are describing us conservatives incorrectly in a way that would cause everyone to be against conservatives and then rallying people to hate conservatives because that's not who conservatives are. Let me back up a bit about the mad cow business. You mentioned that briefly. How many people in this country have died from mad cow?
We don't know, Rich. One of the reasons we don't know is because it looks like some of the autopsies are showing that a lot of this epidemic of Alzheimer's may actually be CJD.
Well,
we don't know, and that's been underfunded too. Rich, we're out of time on this break. I'm sorry. But call back again. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks for the call. 1-866-889-8894. This is Tom Hartman. 20 minutes past the hour. Exposing the con in conservatives. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Peer pressure often leads outdoor expeditions into risky situations. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. You're out on a wilderness hike and you begin to feel fatigued, but you don't say anything to your companions because you don't want to seem weak or be the one to end the expedition. That's a common situation, according to Lawrence Gonzalez, the author of Deep Survival, Who Lives, Who Dies, and Why. Gonzalez says peer pressure, real or imagined, often keeps people from speaking up during outdoor recreation activities. He says the stronger hikers or climbers in a group should watch for signs of trouble among their companions.
You really have to look out for and pace yourself to the least capable member of the group. If you have a beginner going out with experts, the experts are going to have to wait, and people often get into trouble, you know, where they don't want to be the one to say, hey, I can't go any faster, will you please slow down? And then they do something dumb like separate the group or just work too hard and exhaust themselves.
Gonzalez says mismatches between abilities can lead to friction, frustration, and poor decision-making. He says you should make sure you're all on the same page before signing up for a group expedition.
There is a type that psychologists refer to as impulsive sensation seekers. And those are the people who you want to be careful about because they're going to take way more risk than is advisable and probably get you hurt as well as themselves. You need to know what type you are, and especially if you're going out with others, match your abilities with theirs.
Gonzalez says there's no shame in recognizing your limitations. He says it's one of the keys to having a safe and rewarding wilderness experience. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Some corporate executive perks have legendary status, like former GE chairman Jack Welch's post-retirement Manhattan apartment and Knicks tickets, or former Tyco CEO Dennis Kozlowski's Mediterranean birthday party for his wife, all on the company tab. But most executive perks go unnoticed thanks to weak rules at the Securities and Exchange Commission, which allow companies to classify such spending as general unspecified business expenses, exempt from public disclosure.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. With drug prices so much lower, it's no wonder America's seniors are getting on the bus and heading to Canada. Though it's technically illegal under FDA rules, senior citizens groups from northern states now routinely charter buses to Canadian pharmacies. Lawmakers in Ottawa created the patented Medicines Prices Review Board to bargain for lower prescription drug costs, and as a result, Canadians pay 30% to 70% less than U.S. citizens.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the TuneTracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original TuneTracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
We'll be right back.
bringing you uncommon sense. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Back to the True People's Radio. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, and Social Security. I just want to put this out for a second. I got a couple of calls here to take, but the Greenspan just warned us about Social Security. And did you know that the Social Security Trust Fund is showing a surplus this year of $1.8 trillion? By 2011, which is the year the Greenspan warned us about, the surplus will be $3.2 trillion. It's fully funded right now through 2042. And if they simply eliminated the income cap of $87,000 so that people making more than $87,000 still had to pay into the Social Security Fund, you could actually raise Social Security benefits and the fund would be solvent forever. Forever. But no, they want to privatize it. They want to put it into the hands of Wall Street. A very interesting agenda there. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. And Chuck in West Virginia is on the line. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Hey, I wanted to call and ask you a question. How, as somebody that agrees with Nader on a lot of things, and can we respectfully, how would you advise us to respectfully request him to get out of the race? I just think that things are... I love what he has to say. In a different time, a different place.
Yeah.
But not right now, you know?
Yeah, as I've said, I respectfully agree with him as well. And in fact, I voted for him 3 years ago. I have come to the conclusion that he's got to be doing this out of an ego trip, because he understands that we don't have proportional representation in the United States and we don't have instant runoff voting. We have first past the post, winner takes all elections, which means it's a system set up that can only function with two parties. It's an unfortunate reality. James Madison complained about it at length in Federalist Number 10, where he warned about the dangers of factions back in 1787. This was before the Federalists and the Republicans and the Democrats and the Democratic Republicans all emerged and all that stuff. And Nader knows this, and he has the audacity to go on radio and television and say, well, nobody in Europe would be complaining about a third-party candidate. Well, that's because in Europe they have proportional representation. I don't know how to respectfully tell him. I don't think he's listening. I think that he is running this thing on an ego trip, because he could be so much more effective if he was to work within one of the parties or both of the parties, or if he was to stand on the outside like he did with Public Citizen and the many other fine groups that he started and actually talk to the issues. He could be so much more effective. And instead,
have you heard if the Greens are going to back him, or do you know anything about that at all?
I am sure there is a huge battle within the Green Party about that right now. And I just frankly don't know. I hope that the Greens end up nominating David Cobb, who's a brilliant guy, and has already said he's going to run a campaign based on, you know, strategic. In the swing states, he's going to tell people not to vote for him. I think because what we really need to do in the United States, if we really want to have a more participatory democracy, we've been doing this in steps ever since 1787. You know, we enfranchised blacks, we enfranchised women, and now it's time for us to say, you know, we need to have instant runoff voting, a system that allows more than two political parties. And Australia did it about 15 years ago.
I'm not totally for sure. I totally understand that instant runoff voting. I don't have any more questions from you, so I'll just hang up and listen to you.
Okay.
Well, kind of maybe explain that just a little bit better.
I would be glad to, Chuck. I'll do it right after this break. We got to take.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for your call. 1-866-889-8894. This is Tom Hartman. Stick around right after the break. We'll very quickly explain instant runoff voting, and then we got Bill in Wisconsin and Philip in Florida. Hang on, guys. We'll get your calls in just a minute. This is Tom Hartman.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A little-known moment of union busting occurred during Haiti's recent coup d'etat. Workers at the Grupo M textile factory on the Haitian side of the border with the Dominican Republic recently formed their own union. The factory is probably best known for making Levi's jeans. Well, last Monday, as rebels seized the capital, managers at the factory fired every union member. Tuesday saw remaining workers protest, and that's when a contingent of rebels visited the factory, reportedly at management's request. They rounded up some 36 people, beat several, and arrested 10. They were released after spending a day in jail, charges unknown. All who were fired last week have been told to pick up their final paychecks today.
The nearly three-year boycott of Taco Bell has gained new momentum with protest rallies outside Yum Brands, Taco Bell's parent company, and at Taco Bell headquarters in Irvine, California. Coalition of Immokalee Workers members erected a pyramid of 120 tomato buckets outside the company's headquarters, representing the 2 tons of tomatoes immigrant workers have to pick to earn $50 in a day. Tile Bañales from Comercial Justo.
They've used the excuse that it's their distributors that need to make this change, but Taco Bell is a huge corporation that buys a ton of tomatoes every year, and if Taco Bell can push and be a heavyweight and say, hey, we want to support responsible labor practices, it'll happen.
Julia Perkins is a staffer with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers and explains the reasons for the boycott.
No health insurance, no sick days, no overtime pay for overtime work, nothing, no benefits of any kind. And in addition, they're excluded from the right to organize.
Workers vow to continue their struggle until they receive a wage increase of 1 penny per every pound of tomatoes picked.
Better late than never, the Securities and Exchange Commission announces plans to form a special branch to investigate corporate links to so-called rogue nations. A new law requires the SEC to investigate corporate ties to states on the government's list of terrorism supporters and to make that information available to shareholders and the public. But the promise of the SEC's new Office of Global Security Risk is quite limited. As of now, the agency's only devoting 5 people to the project.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Weapons of mass destruction isn't the only thing Bush can't seem to find these days. The nearly 2.5 million new jobs predicted by presidential advisors hasn't materialized. The latest Bureau of Labor Statistics report shows an unchanged unemployment rate of 5.6%, but the Economic Policy Institute notes one reason the unemployment numbers haven't risen is that last month, 392,000 people dropped out as labor force participants. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not from some right-wing think tank or the RNC. And greetings to all of our listeners coast to coast, border to border, particularly our trucker listeners on the Sirius satellite. Hey, it's great to have you here. Let me just very quickly, I know I've got a bunch of people on hold here, but let me just very quickly explain instant runoff voting. Instant runoff voting, a very straightforward system. It's in place now in many cities and communities across the United States. This is how they do it in Australia. See, Australia had adopted the same kind of electoral system we have in the United States, and Greece has it also, which basically is where you can only have two parties. I mean, it's just that simple. And the reason why you can have only two parties is, in terms of political philosophy, is because when somebody comes along who basically agrees with the philosophy of one of the two parties, I mean, they may strongly disagree on 90%, but whoever they're most closely aligned with, they're going to pull votes from. And so, you know, you had, some would say, Ross Perot pulled votes from George Bush Sr., handing the election to Bill Clinton, although there's a lot of debate about that. A lot of folks think he pulled votes from Clinton as well. And there are, you know, people who say, oh, Ralph Nader pulled votes from Bush, or he got people who wouldn't have voted, quack, quack, quack. But the bottom line is that a third-party candidacy in our type of democracy, what's called first-past-the-post, winner-take-all, a third-party candidacy will always harm the candidate with whom they are most closely aligned. Here in Vermont, for example, our attorney general and our governor both won with roughly 40% of the vote. Now, how can you win with 40% of the vote? Well, because the Democrat got 38% of the vote, and the progressive candidate, instead of the Green Party being big here in Vermont, we have the Progressive Party is big. The progressive candidate pulled 20% more or less of the vote. I mean, there's a lot of progressives in Vermont. They pulled 20-some-odd percent of the vote. So between them and the Democrats, they handed the election to the Republican. So the solution to that is what's called instant runoff voting. And in instant runoff voting, imagine that it was 2000. And I'm voting, okay? I voted for Ralph Nader because I wanted to see the Green Party get stronger. I wanted them to qualify for matching funds. I think that it's a good thing. I'm not a member of any particular political party. I actually, in that election, I voted for Ralph Nader for president, who was a Green. I voted for Jim Jeffords for Senate, who was a Republican. And I voted for Pat Leahy for the Senate, who was a Democrat. So, you know, and I voted for Bernie Sanders, who was an independent. So go figure, right? I'm not claiming any political affiliation. I have voted for all parties in my life and worked for candidates right across the board. Anyhow, so I go into the poll, and I'm going to vote for president. And the ballot, in an instant runoff voting situation, would say president, first choice, second choice. And so I mark Nader as my first choice, and I mark Al Gore as my second choice. They tabulate all the first choice votes. And at that point, let's say you've got a situation where, as we did back then, where Al Gore actually got 500,000 votes more than George W. Bush, but neither one of them got more than 50%. So what they do then is they take the top two, they take the bottom candidates, and you can do it with more than just three. You can do it with six or eight or ten, right? But we'll just use the example of three. So they take the bottom candidate, the one who only got 5%, you know, Ralph Nader, and they delete all the people who voted for him, those votes, and they go to their second choice. Now, I would suggest the vast majority of people who voted for Ralph Nader would have had as their second choice Al Gore. So those Nader votes then become counted as Al Gore votes because that's the second choice. So it's a runoff election, basically, instantly done, which is why it's called instant runoff voting. And what it does is it allows you to have third-party candidates in the election, raising the issues, participating in the debates, keeping people honest, and not harm with whom they're most closely philosophically aligned. And this works both, you know, you can have you, this way. See, with instant runoff voting, you could also have, you know, a Pat Buchanan or a Pat Robertson in there, and he wouldn't harm George W. Bush, and he could raise his issues. It's good for both parties, frankly. Although the only party that's really been promoting it is the Greens. And the Democrats have been sort of, yeah, sometimes they're in favor of it, sometimes they're not, it depends. But this is, you know, there's well over 100 communities in America now that have instant runoff voting. As I said, about 15 years ago, Australia instituted it nationwide, and it has worked spectacularly for them. So that's what it is and how it works. Now, on to our calls here. Let's see if I'm reading this right. Bill in Wisconsin on line two. There we go. Hey, Bill, welcome to the Tom Hartman radio program. If you're there. Bill in Wisconsin should be on line too. Yeah. Hey, Bill.
How's that?
That's better. You must have had your mic muted. That's okay.
I've got a headset.
What's up?
I guess the problem I'm having is the quandary I'm in is I'm upset at Bush for some of the things he's done, but his tax cut, all right, I make like between 40 and 50 a year. I paid less in income tax, but at the same time with all these other fees and state taxes and sales taxes and all this, I'm giving away 40% of my income.
Sure.
But I have a hard time voting for somebody like Kerry who says he's going to raise my taxes.
I understand.
And, you know, it just, there's no, you know, it's like I'd be holding my nose either way.
Well, here's the bottom line with regard to taxes, Bill, and that is that Bush didn't actually reduce your taxes. What he did was he borrowed money from your children and gave some of it to you. And that money is going to have to be paid back, and part of it's going to be paid back by you. You know, $186 billion of our federal tax load this year was interest on the money that Ronald Reagan borrowed when he did the same thing.
Well, I think the larger problem also is it's not just, you know, I'm all for tax cuts, but where I have a problem is all this, you know, they cut taxes or they close loopholes like Reagan did, and they wind up taking in all this extra money, but then they spend like madmen. You know, I mean, that's the problem we've got in Wisconsin here is they keep spending on all these social programs. It's like, you know, yeah, I like to help people too, but if you help them too much, they come to expect it. You know, I mean, I've been employed my entire adult life,
yeah.
And I haven't always, you know, I haven't always had the best of jobs, but, you know, you got to start somewhere.
I'll have to get that. You know, I don't have the numbers right in front of me right now, Bill, but the reality of the situation is the government spending on social programs, if you set aside Social Security, which has its own unique tax and its own unique funding, is infinitesimal compared to government spending right now on largely on defense, which is more than half of our budget, and on the debt. We're spending more on paying off Reagan's debt than we are on most social programs in the United States. This is a straw man argument that that conservatives have been throwing out for a long, long time. Conservatives who believe that we shouldn't fund social programs, and I've been in country, I've worked in countries where the government doesn't fund social programs, and you walk outside your door and you got little kids, you know, grabbing your hands, begging, you know, and lepers on the streets. It's not the kind of world that I think that most of us want to live in.
No, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, you know, don't spend on social programs. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying you help the people that need the help.
Right.
But you can only help somebody for so long. You know, eventually they've got to take some responsibility for themselves. There's people that can't help themselves. And, hey, you know, I mean, I tithe at my church so we can help people out. You know, I give all kinds of money all over.
You know, I don't disagree with you, Bill. What I'm saying is that it's not the social programs that are bringing down that are bringing down the government or that are raising our taxes. It is massive spending to the military-industrial complex, much of it unnecessary and wasteful. I mean, Reagan's spending $1 trillion on Star Wars.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, they spent $8 billion on the Comanche. Then.
Yeah, almost all of it going to huge campaign donors to the Republican Party and largely and also to the Democratic Party as well. And
one other thing real quick.
And financing the debt, sure.
Okay, the only other thing I want to say is that, you know, I've listened to your show about 4 or 5 times, and, you know, I like a lot of what you have to say, but when you or one of your guests starts throwing around George Bush-Hitler comparisons, you tend to lose guys like me.
I'm not making a comparison between Bush and Hitler. I'm making a comparison between the social, the political system that Mussolini came up with, which is fascism, and what the conservative vision, the Greenspan, Bush is part of it, but really I think he's just kind of following the crowd. The whole neocon vision of how a government should be run is, which is bring corporations into governance.
Yeah, and I'm not for that.
Yeah, and I'm not either. And unfortunately, George Bush is. And so, you know,
That's why I say, you know, I mean, which way do I go? How do I hold my nose? You know,
yeah.
I mean,
well, I have the same problem. I don't think that John Kerry is my dream candidate, but I want to stop the bleeding. You say Kerry wants to raise taxes. Actually, government should pay for itself. We should have a legitimate discussion in the United States about what do we want to pay for? What programs do we want to be funding? And we're not having that discussion because
you're
corporations
right.
have got all these politicians in their pocket. And because our campaign finance laws are so screwed up, number one. So we're not having a legitimate discussion about where we're spending our money, and all our money is going to support, so much of our money is going to support corporations. And number two, government should should pay their way just like you and I have to pay our way. Our expenditures should not exceed our income. Right now, every minute of the day, every single minute of the day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every minute, consider the 3 minutes or 4 minutes you've been on this program, Bill, every minute, George Bush spends $997,000 more than he takes in. The federal government.
Yeah, and that's just not good.
It's not good because you and I are going to have to pay it. Short term, they call it a tax cut, but over the long term, it's devastation, and it's going to cause increased taxes. There's no way around it.
I will say this. You've got a pretty decent show, and I'll try to listen more, and I'll try and take it with a grain of salt with some of these other comparisons. Because I couldn't listen to them when they were nailing Clinton like that. I mean, I didn't like the guy, but he was the president.
Yeah, and I disagree with George Bush's policies, but many of these other guys, but I really believe that they think they're doing the right thing. I know that. People just can't go to sleep at night not believing that they're doing the right thing. I just think they're wrong. So, anyhow, Bill, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I appreciate your kind comments. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. If you'd like to be on the program, Philip in Florida is on the line. Hey, Philip, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi. Listen, I can't believe that no one's talking about the front page article that appeared on the New York Times yesterday, Sunday, in which it was revealed through their reporter the United States has concentration camps holding 10,000 people from age 11 to age 75 in Iraq.
I missed that. I completely missed it. Philip, I'll have to...
And it was even, now listen to this, it was even the big headline on Drudge Sunday.
Yeah.
And when you clicked on it, he gave you some of the information, and then you ultimately went to the New York Times.
Yeah.
That guy who called, he says, wow, you compare Bush with Hitler, that's where you lose me. I got news for you, pal. Hitler had concentration camps, too.
Yeah, but, Hitler declared war on a dozen countries and killed millions of people. And, George Bush is not Adolf Hitler. He's just adopting some of the policies of Mussolini the same way Hitler did.
No, we've gone from light beer to light fascism.
Yeah, exactly.
But this is an important issue. I didn't hear any of the talking heads who never go out of their Washington office, from Blitzer to the other or the other guy from Meet the Press. How can they miss something like this?
And I did too. Yesterday I was playing catch up all day and dealing with technical stuff and trying to get this satellite feed and this, that, and the other thing.
I didn't read the paper. Information on it.
It's possible. I get a couple hundred emails a day, and so at a certain point I.
Well, the article for the people who maybe can't get access it, the article went on to say that many of these people were people who were grabbed in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Whose doors were hammered through by U.S. troops. They have no access to attorneys, family, or anything.
Well, we've been doing that from day one.
And
we've been using the Iraqi
prisoners. From age 11 to age 75.
Yeah, but I mean, under in time of war, there are. I mean, sometimes you have to do things like that. But it sounds to me like this is over the top. I don't know. Let me check out the story, Philip, and I'll report back.
I'm sorry. I don't agree that in times of war you can be a fascist.
I think yes and no. I mean, the rules are different when you're, which again is why we shouldn't be there in the first place. I mean, look at the thousands of young men and women who have come back without arms or without eyes or without legs, and the hundreds who have died. It's it's a tragedy. And
they got men, women, and old and children in this concentration, or the number of concentration camps equal to 10,000. People.
Yeah. Let me check it out, Philip, and I'll get on with it. 1-866-889-8894, 12 minutes before the hour. And let's see, who is next on the line? Eric in Colorado. Hey, Eric.
Yeah, how you doing?
Great. What's up?
I called you last week regarding that when you had a guest for the environment. I'm a Canadian truck driver, and I do 90% U.S., and U.S. politics is very interesting to me because it affects our country.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I want to touch base on you on a couple issues you brought up this morning. Now, maybe it's just my perception. Maybe you can clarify it for me. But in regards to the Treasury fund or your old age security going private and the fact that people are supposed to go with an open rate on their mortgages, it seems to me what's going to happen there is people are going to lose their old age security. They're going to lose their homes. They're going to have absolutely nothing. Now, am I overreacting to this? Or
no.
Is that actually how I'm picking it up? Is that what's going to happen?
That is absolutely right, and that is what I'm predicting. And that is the direction that Greenspan is pushing us. And he's doing it because they are just absolutely desperate to hold this economy together until November.
Well, they're certainly not going to do it that way.
Well, they are. I mean, that's the only thing. There was the stock bubble of the 90s. There's the housing bubble of the aught years, whatever you call this decade. And we're seeing, for example, here in the community where I live, we're seeing, you know, home values going up 10-15% a year. That is not normal. That's a bubble, and it's caused by the low interest rates. It's because it's so much cheaper to buy a house. So, and it's a potential disaster. Eric, I got to run. It's the music means it's time to go. This is Tom Hartman. 10 minutes before the hour. Stick around. We'll be back.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he Nureyev? Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he a guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense in the radical middle. Welcome back. This is Tom Hartman. About 5 minutes before the hour, coming up on 4 minutes, actually. Mark in Dallas, I believe. Let me just pop that.
That's correct.
Yeah, there we go. Hey, Mark. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What's up?
Thanks, Tom. Say, I wanted to take exception to Bill, the conservative that called a couple callers ago. The one thing that really irks me about the Republicans and conservatives when they bring up this whole personal responsibility issue, I've been unemployed now for 45 months, have a BSEE and MBA, commercial pilot, and was an honorably discharged naval veteran. And I ask these people, are you trying to tell me I wasn't personally responsible enough? And hence, that's the reason I can't find a job? It just doesn't fly in the face of it.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a role for government. On the other hand, people say, "Hey, I'm paying 40% of my income in taxes. Isn't that enough?" And I would say, "Yeah." And we need to have a rational conversation in America about what those tax dollars are being spent for. And we're not having that conversation because the insurance company has the insurance industries have their hands around the throats of our politicians. The big media companies have their hands around the throats of our media. I mean, you know, here it is. You're not hearing these things discussed in the media.
Well, just to follow up, I think you're providing a valuable service because he was telling you what he finds repugnant in the conversation, and I'm telling back to him what I find repugnant in the conversation because the whole personal responsibility issue just drives me through the roof.
Yeah, yeah. Well said, Mark. Thank you very much. Personal responsibility is important, and you can't control everything in your life. Anybody who thinks you can is mistaken. 1-866-889-8894. Jerry in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hey, Jerry, welcome to the program.
How are you?
I'm great. We're short on time here. Got it.
I'll make this real quick. Okay. I listened, and this is sort of along the line with the guy who was just talking. I was listening to a show on the television last night. Gloria Borgia was on there, and Paul Jugo, and they said, Gloria Borgia said, well, you know, the unemployment may be bad, but you got to remember 250,000 people quit looking for jobs last month.
Right, which means the unemployment numbers are actually worse. If you were to add in the people who have given up on looking for jobs, we'd have unemployment around 7%, 7-8%.
Yeah, but what is so ridiculous is those people haven't quit looking for jobs. They're just taken off the rolls.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. They're still looking for jobs. Well said, Jerry. Thanks a lot. 1-866-889-8894, our number. But that's the end of the show, folks, for this hour. 2 minutes before the hour. Talk radio for the rest of us.
Democracy is coming to the USA.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.hartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A series of tax breaks for wealthy Americans and a ballooning military budget has the federal government running a record deficit. What to do? If you're Alan Greenspan, try cutting Social Security benefits. 3 years ago, the chairman of the Federal Reserve told Congress that tax cuts wouldn't endanger Social Security benefits. Fast forward to last week when the Fed chief asked Congress to reduce the cost of living increases in Social Security checks. Greenspan also proposed rolling back the retirement age to 67 years old.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Layoffs usually focus on those who go unemployed, but those left behind also pay a price in their health. Analysis of the Finnish workforce by researchers at the University of Helsinki, published in the British Medical Journal, found that when a company downsized staff by 18% or more, it sparked a significant rise in the number of sick days taken by surviving employees. The main culprit? Stress from a heightened workload and the loss of workplace.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. John Kerry on Sunday accused George W. Bush of stonewalling separate inquiries into the events leading up to the September 2001 terrorist attacks, as well as into the intelligence that suggested Saddam Hussein was hiding weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Kerry, the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee, endorsed complaints by some members of a federal commission investigating the attacks that Bush was resisting their efforts to get documents and question witnesses. Kerry said the public deserves an answer as soon as possible about what went wrong leading up to the attacks, which killed nearly 3,000 people in New York, Washington, and Pennsylvania. Senator John McCain said on Sunday the commission created by George W. Bush to investigate intelligence failures in the buildup to the Iraq War needs subpoena power. McCain, a member of the bipartisan panel, said such powers would give the commission certain credibility and voiced hope an agreement would be reached to obtain it. Asked on ABC's This Week if he would continue to serve on the commission if it did not get subpoena power, McCain said, "I'd hate to throw down the gauntlet like that." Bush gave the commission until March 31, 2005 to report back, meaning results would not be known until after November when voters decide whether to give him a second term. Leaders of 85% of the nation's mosques are involved in terrorist activities, and some have made irresponsible statements about the September 11th terrorist attacks, said Representative Peter King, a Long Island Republican. The 85% figure was drawn from research done for his recently published novel, Veil of Tears, about the World Trade Center attacks. Muslim groups on Long Island have denounced the claim, accusing him of fanning anti-Muslim sentiment to sell books. King denied that charge. He said leaders of the mosque in Westbury, New York, had tried to pass blame for the attacks on a Zionist conspiracy and had not cooperated with law enforcement officers investigating potential terrorist activities. More news after this.
Sting for VH1's Save the Music.
When children learn music, they learn to think in a different way. Studies have shown that it helps them to do better work in other subjects. So make sure your kids learn music. They'll learn much more than how to carry a tune.
School music programs are in trouble. Help VH1 save the music in our public schools. Please call toll-free 1-888-VH1-4MUSIC.
VH1 Save the Music, because music education equals brain power.
A German court rejected a legal bid on Friday by an unemployed man who wanted the state to provide him with free pornography and trips to brothels because his wife is in Thailand. The court in the southern town of Ansbach ruled that social services did not extend to satisfying the 43-year-old's sexual needs after he attempted to sue his local welfare office. The man earlier asked the foreign ministry to fly his wife back from her native Thailand, to which she had returned in 2002, saying that he could not afford the ticket. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
The
Bushites and their corporate sponsors are quick to demand that science, not politics, should be the sole basis for making regulatory policies. Of course, the question is, whose science? The corporate-funded science or the genuine product of independent scientists? For example, after a mad cow outbreak last December, a panel of international scientists was convened by Ag Secretary Ann Veneman to review America's beef production system. She expected the panel to rubber stamp the beef industry myth that America has no real mad cow problem and that our safety rules are more than adequate. But, holy Big Mac, the panel found that mad cow disease is common in our cattle herds, that USDA's voluntary tracking system is grossly inadequate, and that the meat industry's method of feeding rendered hogs, chickens, and other animals to cattle is inherently unsafe. It called for a major strengthening of the regulatory system. The Bushites and industry responded to this scientific finding by playing politics. Industry lobbyists blindly reiterated the absurd claim that mad cow poses no risk to consumers. They decried the scientists' report as negative in tone, and they asserted that the best policy was not to get regulators involved, but letting the industry address these things. The Bushites bowed to the politics, stiffing the science and us. Why? Because they are the industry. Secretary Veneman previously was a corporate agribusiness lawyer and lobbyist, and now her chief of staff, her top spokeswoman, and the head of her agency's regulatory programs all came from top positions in the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, the industry's main lobbying front. This is Jim Hightower saying, did I mention that meat processors and corporate cattle operators have put nearly $1 million into Bush's presidential campaign? The Bushites can talk about science till the cows come home, but their policies are all about politics.
LendingTree.com presents How to Be in Total Control of the Home Buying Process. Method 1, own your own real estate company.
I'm rich!
Method 2, come to LendingTree.com, where you can get a mortgage and a real estate agent at the same time. Just fill out one simple form and choose from up to 4 agents and mortgage offers. Call 1-800-555-TREE or visit LendingTree.com. See website for details and state license disclosures. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions may apply.
When you hear how big businesses get all the best technology for the best price, does it make you crazy? To calm down, here's a thought from the voice of reason. Get a Xerox M15i. It's not just a digital copier printer that gives you 16 quality pages a minute. It also scans and faxes in color. All that and more for a $66 a month lease. Big business or small, what could be more reasonable?
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details, toner and photoreceptor.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends. The Tom Hartman radio program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix. 7 minutes past the hour, South Africa has spoken out about Aristide. I think this is fascinating. South Africa, this is an article by Andrew Gumbel in the Independent in the UK. South Africa added its voice last night to a growing international chorus questioning the circumstances surrounding Jean-Bertrand Aristide's departure from Haiti and demanded an investigation into allegations that the U.S. forcibly removed a democratically elected president from office. In a thinly veiled attack on the Bush administration, South Africa's foreign affairs minister, whose name I won't try to pronounce, but it ends with Zuma, said that if Mr. Aristide had been prized from power against his will, it will have, quote, serious consequences and ramifications for the respect of the rule of law and democracy the world over, end quote. And I would say yes, at the very least, absolutely. And, you know, and on top of that, I mean, you've got this, this situation here now where I'm looking for the story. I thought I had it in the right order here, but apparently I'll find it during the next break. But anyhow, where the A group flew over. Here it is right here. A group flew over to the Central African Republic, where Aristide is being held, or is in exile, as our government would call it. And a delegation from the United States, they go through the list of the names of all these people and all this stuff. And they showed up, and here's a quote from Mr. Ives. Let's see, Kim Ives, a personal friend of Jean-Bertrand Aristide and Milton Aristide, said, and I quote, "We were stopped at the gates by a guard who contacted a Central African Republic official inside the building. A representative of the Central African Republic came out to speak with us. We asked to go in to visit President Aristide and were told we could not. We asked if he could come out to see us, and we were told no. We asked if we could send in a note with our phone number, and we were told no. The official then told us that he had spoken with the Minister of Defense, this of the Central African Republic, and that Aristide was not allowed to receive visitors." Now, also in this delegation was Brian Concannon, who is President Aristide's attorney. Standing outside the gates of the compound where President Aristide is being held, Mr. Concannon requested to meet with President Aristide alone for a consultation. This was also denied. Sarah Flounders of the International Action Center said, and I quote, "The world has been told that President Aristide is free to come and go and that he has simply chosen not to leave. The fact that our delegation has been denied all forms of contact with President Aristide confirms, in fact, that he is being kept under lock and key, at this point not even able to communicate by telephone." What is going on here? Are we in the business now of overthrowing democratically elected governments? I mean, at least Aristide had an opponent in the last election. It wasn't like, you know, the phony elections that Saddam had. I mean, what does this say to nations around the world and to people around the world who look to the Statue of Liberty and say, America is, you know, democracy, the ideals of democracy. Yes, we want to be like America. We want to be like the United States. Because they believe in democracy. I mean, whatever happened to the idea of letting people make their own mistakes? If Aristide is failing, let him fail. But we go in and we first grant these IMF loans and then we refuse to participate in them. There has been this extraordinary level of manipulation of the Haitian economy by the United States over the past 2.5 years that many suggest led to this situation, and now the guy is under lock and key. This concerns me. This is strange. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to call. 12 minutes past the hour. Ed in Dayton, Ohio is on the line. Hey, Ed, you're live with Tom Hartman. What's up?
Hello. I'm calling because I've been listening this afternoon, and I've been hearing people say some things that amazed me. This guy who's saying, well, you know, I'm paying 40% of my income in taxes, and you know, I feel burdened by these social programs that I'm paying for, and you know, it didn't seem to make a dent when you pointed out to him that a lot of what he's paying for is the debt that was run up by the Reagan administration, because after that he still repeated that they were being fiscally responsible. But the thing about that is
the other thing that I forgot to mention to him was that John Kerry has said that he is not going to repeal the income taxes on a reduction on people earning less than $200,000 a year.
And that's where it comes in. Is that if we had a tax system that didn't have a cap on it, is somewhere near the upper end of the middle class, so that people who make more than that are exempted from paying their fair share, either directly or through some whatever kinds of accounting maneuvers they can make. And if people like Kenneth Lay and Bill Gates and all those people you know, I've got not equating the two of them with each other, but if people in those kinds of brackets were paying their fair share, perhaps it wouldn't be such a burden on ordinary people to support the things that we need to do.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think on the other hand that we need to honor and respect Bill for having the courage to call a radio show and share his opinion.
At least he's thinking about it, and I think that's a great thing.
Yeah.
I just wish that more people would continue thinking all the way through this process and look at what's really happening.
Yeah.
The other thing about the instant runoff voting, what if somebody votes for two-third parties? First choice is like Green, and second choice is something like, I don't know, Libertarian or Natural Law Party or something. And what happens to their vote?
And neither of those parties makes it?
Yeah, well, obviously, you know, if you have 8 or 10 parties, everyone assumes that people's second choice would be the Democrats or Republicans, but I mean, we have to consider.
Well, you can have third choices and fourth choices.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, we probably need at least three choices.
Yeah, I mean,
us being in the business of overthrowing democracies. We've had Allende in the 70s, Iran in the 50s, Grenada in the 80s, Nicaragua twice in the last century.
Yeah. No, but that's no reason to continue doing it.
No, absolutely.
I mean, every single one of those ended in disaster. I mean, look,
of course they did.
Installing
a bad thing to be doing.
Yeah, the Middle East would not be where it's at right now if we hadn't installed the Shah of Iran. I mean, you know, So anyhow,
okay.
Ed, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. This week marked the one-year anniversary of the creation of the Department of Homeland Security. And, you know, what is going on? How is that doing? Well, you know, our ports are still vulnerable. In fact, the Justice Department's Inspector General reported that, and I quote, "The United States remains vulnerable to infiltration by known criminals and terrorists because of chronic delays in making millions of FBI fingerprints available to the Border Patrol. The nation is still 4 years away from an integrated system between the FBI and Border Patrol to better coordinate their operations." And now Bush just cut this deal with Vicente Fox where they're going to let people across the Mexican border without ID, without photo ID. Did I get that right? Maybe I misunderstood it. Their visas wouldn't have to that they wouldn't be photographed. Maybe I missed something. I need to go back and look at that because I saw that and I thought, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. According to the porous ports, according to the American Association of Port Authorities, it would take about $2 billion to adequately bolster the country's seaports. Only $2 billion. I mean, that's a lot of money. $2 billion is a lot of money, and yet you know we've spent $150 billion so far in Iraq. The original $80 billion plus the $87 billion that he asked for last year. Plus, of course, there's no money for Iraq in the current budget that the president has proposed that's going to have a $500 billion deficit. And so he's going to come back after the election and ask for another $80 billion. So in part, we can supply health care for all Iraqis. I just find it amazing that Americans aren't scratching their heads going, wait a minute. We are giving Iraq single-payer national health care system, but it's not a good idea in the United States? Anyhow, the American Association of Port Authorities says it's going to take $2 billion. Instead, there are, quote, fewer than 100 inspectors assigned to overseas ports, end quote, to inspect cargo containers headed to the U.S. And you know, this... I'm not giving away national security secrets here. I mean, this is in the newspaper. If somebody wants to smuggle a bomb or some horrible thing into the United States, in fact, they made a movie out of it. Was it called Doomsday or something? Our ports are just wide open. And this administration has done nothing about it. They don't want to spend the $2 billion. And why? You tell me. I can't come up with a decent reason. I mean, there's the conspiracy theorists out there who say that, well, they don't want to expand the size of government. And then there are the conspiracy theorists who say, and the reason why is because those government employees are unionized and the Bush administration is philosophically opposed to expanding anything that's unionized. But, you know, last month, When the Bush administration said last month that the economy would create 360,000 new jobs, and the Wall Street Journal said last month that the economy would create 150,000 new jobs, they predicted the month before. Turns out last month there were only 21,000 new jobs created, and 100% of those new jobs were government jobs. So the government is growing. It's just not in protecting our ports. It's mostly in the Defense Department. Studies show hospitals in major cities won't be able to handle the immediate influx of victims in the event of a biological or chemical weapons attack. This is from a report by the Center for American Progress. The slow funding trickle. President Bush has requested $40.2 billion for the Department of Homeland Security. And many folks say that's $14 billion too low. The money that is available is taking too long to get into the hands of those who need it, like local firefighters, cops, and medical units. Mayors and police and fire chief and chiefs and hospital administrators across the country decry the lack of Homeland Security dollars that have actually reached them. The nation's firefighters this week released a statement berating the White House for cutting funding for first responders. The general president of the International Association of Firefighters said 1 year after DHS's creation, our nation's firefighters and emergency medical personnel are still operating with too few staff, outdated equipment, and the need for training to appropriately and safely respond. This is Tom Hartman, 20 minutes past the hour. Stick around, we'll be back.
Scientists try to save what's left of a wetland in the deserts of Iraq. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The southeastern corner of Iraq was once a wetland that covered more than 7,000 square miles. Many Christians, Muslims, and Jews believe it was the ancient Garden of Eden. More than 90% of it was drained in the early 1990s, but today people from around the world are trying to protect what's left. An international conservation team of scientists from the United States and Iraq are working on a project called Eden Again. Michelle Stevens works on the project. She says the vast marshland once looked like a sea of green reeds in the desert. Its waters were filled with fish and wildlife, especially migrating birds.
There were a huge number of different kinds of birds, of Dalmatian pelicans and ducks and geese that used those marshes. 1 to 10 million birds, an entire flyway, wintered there from Siberia.
In the early 1990s, the regime of Saddam Hussein built canals a mile wide to drain the marsh, apparently to flush out opponents to the regime who tried to hide there. Stephen says what's left is an ecological wasteland.
It's not degraded wetland, it's desert. It's big blocks of soil cracked and dry and covered with salt. Where there were once lakes, there's now 1 to 2 feet of salt. So it really turned a huge area into a desert.
Stephen says the Eden Again project is working to protect a small portion of the marshes that still remain. It will help the people of Iraq reflood some parts of the wetland that are not badly damaged by salt. Its ultimate vision is having the wetland restored in its entirety. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost it.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Jobs lost, 2.4 million. Federal deficit, $455 billion. War in Iraq, 9,000 human lives. Friends left the United Nations, 3. America's future, bankrupt.
The time is now. Take our country back.
Stories of courage need to be shared. That's why we want to tell you about Senators Bob Graham and Bill Nelson. They have stood strong to protect our coastlines from exploration and drilling by powerful oil and gas companies. But the fight's not over. Congress is now pushing an energy bill that still threatens our coastlines with oil and gas activities, hands billions of dollars in tax breaks over to the oil, gas, coal, and nuclear companies, and could exempt polluters from clean air and safe drinking water laws. What's more, this so-called energy bill doesn't cut our dangerous dependence on foreign oil, fix what's wrong with our aging energy grid, adequately promote renewable wind and solar power, protect consumers, or increase the efficiency or security of our energy system. There is a better way. Call Senators Graham and Nelson at 202-225-3121. Thank them for their courage and ask them to reject this dangerous energy bill. Paid for by the Florida Sierra Club.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Talk radio for the rest of us. It's Tom Hartman, 25 minutes past the hour. Senator John McCain. But just to wrap up the last rant there, you know, this administration is failing so badly. It is, setting aside partisan stuff. Because I was ragging on Bill Clinton when he was going for WTO and GATT and NAFTA and the Telecommunications Act. I mean, I'm an equal opportunity critic, I guess. But this is just spectacular. I mean, it's horrific in a way. The failure to protect our nation. I have some concerns about this word homeland. Has anybody heard the word homeland before 9/11? If you'd lived in Germany, you would have heard it. But, yeah, that's another discussion. Anyhow, this is a spectacular failure to secure the nation. And the invasion of Iraq, there's no weapons of mass destruction, the country represented no threat to us, there were no terrorists, there was no Al-Qaeda. And now we have squandered an enormous amount of our wealth. Enough money to hire hundreds of thousands of school teachers, to rebuild our hospital infrastructure. I mean, $150 billion is an enormous amount of money that we have spent in Iraq that could have done so much good here in the United States. And it's just a tragedy. And now we get into Iraq on, quote, bad intelligence, end quote, right? And of course, the evidence is that it wasn't bad intelligence at all, that the intelligence was just fine, but that basically Dick Cheney's office primarily, and as I've been saying for a year now, you know, he's going to be replaced by Rudy Giuliani on the ticket, so he can do these things. But anyhow, Dick Cheney's office went through, and they just took out the caveats. You know, the intelligence says, well, so-and-so may, or possibly there's the... They took out the mays and the possiblies. And this is the job of good intelligence officers, is to make sure that the raw intelligence that comes in. I mean, you got some informer on the street, and he comes up to a spy, and he says, hey, give me $50, I'll give you a tip. And the guy spy gives him $50, and the guy says, that building around the corner, there's a bomb-making factory in there. And thanks. Okay, that's raw intelligence. Does it mean it's right? Most of the time, it's not. Most of the time, raw intelligence is wrong. And everybody in the intelligence community knows this. Everybody in government knows this. This is not a secret. Anybody who's read three spy novels knows this. And that's why you vet stuff. But Don Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney set up their own little department there in the Pentagon. And Scooter Libby going down there to the CIA every couple days. Hey, guys, what you got? Let me see the raw intelligence. Oh, here's a good one. A lot of it coming from Ahmed Chalabi, the convicted bank swindler. I mean, he can't leave Iraq because there are arrest warrants out for him in other nations. I believe it's Jordan where he is under indictment for bank swindling. And this is the guy, the Iraqi National Congress, that was feeding us most of our intelligence. This is our ally. This is the guy that wants to be prime minister of Iraq. If you saw him on 60 Minutes last night, it's just amazing. And so now John McCain is trying to figure out what's going on with this. And he's come up against a little bit of a barrier. John McCain has this very odd idea. I'll tell you about more right after the break. But he's got this very odd idea that the government should be able to investigate things like massive intelligence failures that lead to the death of hundreds of Americans. And they should have subpoena power. They should have the ability to require witnesses to come and speak. What about that? Is that a strange idea or not? What are your thoughts? 29 minutes past the hour. You're listening to the radio support group of By It For We the People, the Tom Hartman Program. Stay tuned.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A little-known moment of union busting occurred during Haiti's recent coup d'etat. Workers at the Grupo M textile factory on the Haitian side of the border with the Dominican Republic recently formed their own union. The factory's probably best known for making Levi's jeans. Well, last Monday, as rebels seized the capital, managers at the factory fired every union member. Tuesday saw remaining workers protest, and that's when a contingent of rebels visited the factory, reportedly at management's request. They rounded up some 36 people, beat several, and arrested 10. They were released after spending a day in jail, charges unknown. All who were fired last week have been told to pick up their final paychecks today.
The nearly three-year boycott of Taco Bell has gained new momentum with protest rallies outside Yum! Brands, Taco Bell's parent company, and at Taco Bell headquarters in Irvine, California. Coalition of Immokalee Workers members erected a pyramid of 120 tomato buckets outside the company's headquarters, representing the 2 tons of tomatoes immigrant workers have to pick to earn $50 in a day. Tile Bañales from Comercial Justo.
They've used the excuse that it's their distributors that need to make this change. But Taco Bell is a huge corporation that buys a ton of tomatoes every year. And if Taco Bell can push and be a heavyweight and say, hey, we want to support responsible labor practices, it'll happen.
Julia Perkins is a staffer with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers and explains the reasons for the boycott.
No health insurance, no sick days, no overtime pay for overtime work, nothing, no benefits of any kind. And in addition, they're excluded from the right to organize.
Workers vow to continue their struggle until they receive a wage increase of 1 penny per every pound of tomatoes picked.
Better late than never, the Securities and Exchange Commission announces plans to form a special branch to investigate corporate links to so-called rogue nations. A new law requires the SEC to investigate corporate ties to states on the government's list of terrorism supporters and to make that information available to shareholders and the public. But the promise of the SEC's new Office of Global Security Risk is quite limited. As of now, the agency's only devoting 5 people to the project.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Weapons of mass destruction isn't the only thing Bush can't seem to find these days. The nearly 2.5 million new jobs predicted by presidential advisors hasn't materialized. The latest Bureau of Labor Statistics report shows an unchanged unemployment rate of 5.6%. But the Economic Policy Institute notes one reason the unemployment numbers haven't risen is that last month, 392,000 people dropped out as labor force participants. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
bringing you uncommon sense. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Especially when Bush is bumped out of office.
I see skies of blue and clouds of white. The bright, blessed day, the dark, sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Oh, what a great song. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman with you. John McCain, yeah, it'll be a wonderful world when we have a change in administration. I'm telling you, it just can't get worse. I mean, it's maybe I'm an idealist. Maybe I am. The administration, John McCain, interviewed by The Hill, this publication, which is like the kind of newspaper of Capitol Hill. All the congressmen and senators and everybody reads it, right? It's like the insider's newspaper. And they call up John McCain, and you see, he's originally, George Bush did not want there to be a commission to investigate the failure of intelligence. So then, you know, he got all this pressure from Democrats and even some Republicans. And so a few months ago, he signed executive order. This is actually on February 6th. He signed an executive order to form a 9-member commission. And quoting from The Hill, but the president defined the scope of its inquiry narrowly, appointed its members without consulting congressional Democrats, and denied it subpoena power. Bush also asked the commission to report back by March 5th, 2005, 5 months after the general election. Yeah, right. There's something wrong with our intelligence service. The CIA isn't getting it right. The NSA has got it screwed up. We got to do something. Let's wait a year to find out what the results are. What's wrong with this picture? Anyhow, John McCain says to The Hill, I just think you need to have the threat of subpoena power. Quote, end quote. But The Hill says McCain called Dick Cheney on the phone. He called him up on the phone, right? Hey, Dick. We need to get subpoena power for this commission. And what does Dick Cheney say to John McCain? No. No way. We're not going to support subpoena power. Forget it. We don't really want... Are you kidding? Really find out what kind of an intelligence failure led to the death of more than 500 Americans and more than 3,000 of them losing an arm or a leg or both? Nah. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to be on the program today. And Steve in Charleston is on the line. Hey, Steve, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's a great show. Thanks a lot. I'm glad you're there.
I'm glad I'm here, too. What's up?
You mentioned the observation on Airseed that we had moved into a position of removing democratically elected officials.
I'm not asserting that. I'm questioning that.
Yeah, but we have a long history of doing that, actually. If you look through Chile, Guatemala...
Sure.
Go back to 1915 through
1915 was
El Salvador. And
1915 was actually the year of the first time we did it in Haiti.
Right.
But in any case, yeah.
And even into Italy, where we took it upon ourselves to help make sure the right people were elected after World War II.
Yeah.
So it isn't a new turn to our history, from as far as I can tell.
But that doesn't make it right, Steve.
No, it's not right at all. No, it's appalling.
And it's also, by and large, in the past, we've done it at least in a discreet fashion. Now, some would say that makes it even worse, and I wouldn't disagree with them.
I would. I'd say that when this type of hubris indicates that they don't really expect that there's anybody that can make them pay for it.
Yeah, there's no price to pay, and who cares, and we'll show the world. And see, the problem with that, your hubris is exactly the right word, and the problem with that kind of behavior is that it only lasts as long as you're the top dog. When China, if China tomorrow were to simply sell all the treasuries that it's sitting on, I mean, we'd be broke. I mean, it would just be absolutely devastating to the United States. Russia still has all those nuclear weapons. I mean, we think that we're the most powerful in the world, but we are being whipsawed around by forces that, in many cases, we have empowered. And
right.
Particularly China.
I mean, I agree completely.
Yeah, this administration is completely.
I hope you keep up the good work.
Okay, thanks, Steve. Thanks for the call. I appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. Yep, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. The White House is politicizing 9/11 and the war on terror. Of course, nothing new with that, but a good summary here, which I thought was, really worth sharing. About Bush and Cheney and what they're doing with regard to this, that was put together by David Sirota at the Center for American Progress. Let me share that with you in just a minute. Jane is on the line from Santa Fe. Hey, Jane, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I was listening to you talk about what Bush and Fox did, and they did come to an agreement where they were going to let people come in, and I guess it must be the privileged few who will be allowed to come in if they come in for 3 days and they don't have to take their pictures or fingerprints or anything.
You mean if they say they're coming in for 3 days?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you never know whether they'll stay there longer.
Yeah.
And the other thing, I hate that word, Homeland Security. That's just not American.
Well, Jane, let me share with you the history of that. Thanks for bringing that up, because back in the 1920s, Rudolf Hess and Adolf Hitler shared a jail cell together,
uh-huh.
and Hitler writes about this in Mein Kampf, which was actually largely kind of dictated to Rudolf Hess while Hitler was in jail, and they studied the writings, and I'm forgetting his name now, but he was one of the leading Zionists, one of the leading Jewish guys who was saying that the Jews should have a homeland in the Middle East, advocating for the creation of the state of Israel, because of course there was no Israel at that time,
uh-huh.
And he used, and this Zionist guy whose name is escaping me at the moment, used the word homeland. And he talked about how people should have a homeland. And Hess and Hitler got into this thing and concluded that the core of pulling together the Germans would have to be to convince them that they were a race separate from all the rest of the Europeans and all the rest of people all around the planet, which led to this whole thing of the Aryan race, and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And they borrowed this word from this guy. I mean, it wasn't his word uniquely, but I mean, they cited him as the source of it. And in 1933, when the Nuremberg rally was held,
uh-huh.
Which was the big, huge rally that Leni Riefenstahl made the movie out of and introduced Adolf Hitler, and it was just, this huge thing. I mean, that movie, Triumph of the Will, which you can now get on CD, from Amazon, and you can rent it in your local movie store, a brilliant documentary, is about the Nuremberg rally. And at that Nuremberg rally, Adolf Hess got up, and for the first time used the word homeland in German, Heimland, or Heimacht, and introduced Adolf Hitler by saying, this man is going to restore our homeland. He's going to give us back our homeland. In fact, let me let you listen to this. This is just a short clip. This is Rudolf Hess introducing Adolf Hitler, using the word homeland for the first time.
Dank Ihrer Führung.
Thanks to the Führer.
Deutschland. Sein Ziel erreichen.
Now Deutschland will arise. The homeland shall come back.
I hate that word. I really
Heimat
do.
Zu sein.
Ever since he put it
Für
together.
Alle Deutschen der Welt. Adolf Hitler! Sieg Heil! Sieg Heil!
Yeah, and there it is.
Yeah, I wish somebody would change it. I think it's awful.
Well, I was a little surprised when right after 9/11, suddenly Bush started using the word homeland, because, I mean, we have always referred to the United States as the nation. We've talked about domestic security. We've never referred to the homeland here, because really this is only the homeland of the Native Americans. And if you want to get that way, I mean, if you want to play basically kind of racial politics with it, the way that Hitler tried to, or tribal politics or whatever, you know, and it just spooked me when I first heard.
Well, it's really out of character for the United States of America if you're talking about all the Germans. And that's their homeland, and we have mixed cultures in this country, and that's really not a very good word to use for all the other agencies that he's put under Homeland Security.
Yeah, and you're right, and I'm concerned about the mindset that led to it. Jane, thanks for calling and bringing that up. I do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number, and Jim in Atlanta is on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good afternoon, Tom. You had a fellow to call a little bit earlier and was talking about comparisons to Hitler, and you had read something a few months ago that about the correlation between Bush and Hitler and how he came to powers and the oddities of that. I think it was called The End of Democracy or something like that.
When Democracy Failed. It's something I actually wrote it back after, right after 9/11 for Common Dreams.
I wish for your new listeners that you would read that again. That gave me chills that day. I'll never forget that. A wonderful article, and I live for the day that we can put Bush and Cheney under oath. I appreciate it, Tom.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Good point, and yes, under oath on a lot of things, on a lot of these issues. I mean, this. By the way, that article, When Democracy Failed, is a chapter now in a book that I have coming out on July 4th from Random House, their Crown imprint, called A Return to Democracy, Reviving Jefferson's Dream. And you can find it on tomhartman.com. There's a link to it. And to the page on Amazon, you can pre-order it from your local bookstore. And no, I don't want to sound like I'm hawking my... This is not the Bill O'Reilly show where it's try to sell books, or Sean Hannity. I mean, these guys, you can get their books for 99 cents on the conservative websites. They're doing it. It's like a competition, right? I'm not going to get into that. What's so funny about it is that, you know, a $20 book, the author sees somewhere between 50 cents and a dollar, depending on what kind of deal they got with their publisher. And on a paperback, the author sees somewhere between a dime and 20 cents. But don't get me started on that. Anyhow, President Bush, back on January 23rd of 2002, this, you know, after 9/11, a couple months after 9/11, said, and I quote, "I have no ambition whatsoever to use the war or 9/11 as a political issue," end quote. The war on terror. On May 17th of 2002, Vice President Cheney said making hay of national security in 9/11 is, quote, "thoroughly irresponsible and totally unworthy of national leaders in a time of war," end quote. On March 4th, of last year, the Senate Intelligence Committee ranking member Richard Shelby, the Republican of Alabama, was asked if Republicans should use the war for political gain and responded, "Absolutely not. And as a Republican, I would deplore such tactics. I think what we've got to do in a bipartisan way as Americans is win this war," end quote. But less than 6 months after the attacks, as David Sirota reports, the Center for American Progress, the White House officials were urging candidates, Republican candidates, to exploit 9/11. And I quote National Republican Committee Chairman Representative Tom Davis, quote, "Republicans rolled out a strategy branding anyone who questions the administration as giving aid and comfort to your enemies." Representative Tom Davis, Republican of Virginia, said, "This strategy was codified by Karl Rove in a January speech to the Republican National Committee. He said Republicans, quote, can go to the country on national security issues, end quote, inviting his party to politicize the war in an election year because Americans, quote, trust the Republicans to do a better job of protecting America, end quote." Less than 6 months after the attacks, President Bush makes the defense bill a referendum on patriotism. Despite the lack of concerted opposition, Bush said in an event at Fort Bragg of Congress, "I've heard some of them talking about it's too big up here. Let's just make this as clear as I can make it. The price for freedom is high, but it's never too high. Now is not the time to play politics with the defense budget," he said as he played politics with the defense budget. 9 months after the attacks, the president uses a 9/11 photo to raise money at fundraisers. Here's the official taxpayer-funded photograph that shows George Bush aboard Air Force One talking to Dick Cheney hours after the attacks at the World Trade Center. The White House approves of the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee's plan to use a photograph of President Bush taken on 9/11 as part of a GOP fundraising effort. If you contribute at least $150, you too can have this picture. By September of 2002, the White House admits 9/11 and the war central to its campaign plans under the headline. Now, this is just a year later. The White House advises GOP candidates to focus on war on terrorism. This is a sad state of affairs, a truly sad state of affairs. This is Tom Hartman, 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Bringing you Uncommon Sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
If there's one rule to this game, everybody's gonna name it.
And welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here. And we have three callers and about 2.5 minutes. So I'm going to just do this really quickly here. Diane in Riverside, Indiana is on the line. Hey, Diane, what's up?
Not too much. How are you doing, Tom?
Great.
I just wanted to say, for me, the nightmare kind of started the day that George Bush was having his first press conference. And to answer the first question that was given to him, he said, "It would be a whole lot easier if it was a dictatorship."
Yes, I recall that.
He didn't just say that one time in answer to one question. He said it a second time, Tom.
Oh, I know. He actually made it a regular part of his fundraising speeches for a little while. Just like his "I hit the trifecta" joke about 9/11 solved all his political problems. It's an ongoing thing. Diane, thanks for the comment and the call. 1-866-889-8894. And Ron in Miami's on the line. Hey, Ron, got about a half a minute here.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm a fan of your books. I have ADD, and I found out through your book that I'm a hunter. My question is, with Michael Moore's movie coming out hopefully soon, Fahrenheit 9/11. I noticed with Bill O'Reilly pushing Mel Gibson's movie, and
Mel O'Reilly's an investor in Gibson's movie.
Exactly, and that's probably one of the big reasons why he's trying to do this 24/7 in that big push he's doing. But my question is, didn't Mel Gibson's distribution company pick up Michael Moore's movie, and would he be able to suppress the distribution? Fahrenheit 9/11.
Interesting. Good question. I don't know the answers, Ron. I'm sorry. I don't know the answers to that question. It's a good one. It's a really good one. Here's just back just to wrap up here. By the way, thanks. Before I end the show, it's very important to say thank you. And I want to thank Louise for producing a great show today. And thanks for the folks in our chat room who went to TomHartman.com and clicked on the chat button and showed up live with us for these 3 hours and hung out and contributed all sorts of cool things. Wonderful. And thanks to you for listening. A show without listeners is not a show. So thank you very much. Be sure to tune in tomorrow, same time, same place, for more of the vast radical middle conspiracy. This is Tom Hartman. I'll see you tomorrow.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
We'll take care of her. Got my best man Dick looking at it now.
George Bush says he is fighting terrorism. What does he do? Cut funding for first responders. He says he is for education. What does he do? Underfund his own plan. He says he supports our veterans. What does he do? Cut funding for their health care. George Bush said he'd restore honor and integrity to the White House. It's not what you say, George. It's what you do.
In my country, a group of religious extremists are reshaping the government to promote their own agenda and morality.
The government can keep a list of everyone I call, and they do not need a judge's permission. Our citizens are seized and held in prison without being charged of a crime, without the right to a trial, and without a lawyer. Why should you care about what is happening to my country? Because my country...